It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Stacey Higginbotham's back. Jeff Jarvis is here. Aunt Pruitt is here. And there is a lot to talk about. Right before the show began, Meta made the announcement that their chief operating officer, Sheryl Sandberg, is stepping down after 14 years. What does it mean for Meta and Mark? We'll talk about the Supreme Court rejecting the Texas social media law, at least for now. And then lots of fun with TikTok, giant lobsters, and a Google changelog that isn't awful. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twig. This Week in Google, episode 666, recorded Wednesday, June 1st, 2022. No Country for Old Lobsters. This Week in Google is brought to you by Indochino. If you've got a big day coming up, getting the perfect look is no big deal with Indochino. Get $50 off any purchase of $3.99 or more by using the promo code TWIT at Indochino.com. And by IT Pro TV. Finally, you can enjoy getting an IT education with IT Pro TV. Visit itpro.tv/twit for an additional 30% off all consumer subscriptions for the lifetime of your active subscription when you use the code TWIT30 at checkout. And by New Relic. That next 9 p.m. call is just waiting to happen. Get New Relic before it does, and you can get access to the whole New Relic platform and 100 gigabytes of data free every month forever. No credit card required. Sign up at newrelic.com/twig. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we cover everything but Google, an intense inspection of all stories with the fabulous Jeff Jarvis, who is the Leonard Tow Professor for Journalistic Innovation at the Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York. Hello, Jeff.
Hello.
We're sending you a new camera. Well, you asked us about this Lumina camera.
I asked about a new camera, and I thought, you guys, because you know everything, I thought you'd know. And then next thing I know, you're sending one my way, which was not my intent, I swear, but thank you.
No, I knew about it because it was a Kickstarter or an Indiegogo or something. And yeah. I looked at it, and then apparently they you're going to get a complimentary. I can't wait. I want to be the fly on the wall for this one.
I should record it. Like, no, you're still pink.
A complimentary
You've broken
session.
Our camera.
Yeah, let's see if they can get Jeff looking right.
Can they get this white belt?
He looks good today.
Hey, wait a minute. Holy cow, it's Stacey Higginbotham.
There she is.
As I live and breathe.
And so does she.
Hello, y'all.
She lives and breathes. Welcome back. We missed you so darn much. Stacey on IoT.com is the website.
We were thinking of you.
She was stuck at the Hotel Frisco.
It's the Omni Hotel in Frisco.
I know, but the Hotel Frisco sounds so much better.
It does sound so much better. You're right.
For 2 weeks, quarantining, but now you're safe to be out and about.
I am. I hope so. I've tested negative.
Yay. We were worried. You really actually got it. You don't have to talk about it if you don't want to.
I don't mind. I mean, I was tweeting throughout a huge portion of it because I'm like, I am so alone.
I'm not revealing. You're lonely in there. How many times can you watch The Office from beginning to end? You got it pretty bad, though. You had a serious fever, lost your sense of smell and taste. And you're vaccinated, right?
I'm triple vaxxed. I actually wore a mask. And
so
just beware, folks. I still have a sinus infection, so I sound so bad.
You too could be stuck for 2 weeks in the Hotel Frisco.
Yeah.
It's an Eagles song. It's good. You'll like it.
Thankfully, I made it out.
And we also welcome back. It's been a little bit of a dry spell here. Aunt Pruitt's back from Hands On Photography.
Yay.
Hey, Aunt.
Hey, sir. How you be, sir?
It's good to see you. Aunt has actually outsourced and found soundproofing materials in the Clemson colors. So that's pretty cool. I don't know how you did that.
Soundassured.com.
Oh.
Nice value.
Oh, there you go.
Nice value sound acoustic foam.
You know, it sounds really good. Like you said, it sounds sounds like you're just in this like chamber, the soundproof chamber. It sounds really good.
Plus, there's no dogs in here snoring next to me, so that helps with the audio quality.
Is Aunt Pruitt coming from the void?
Yeah. He actually sounds better there than he does when he's in studio. That's kind of depressing. Oh, well. Big story broke at 1 o'clock this afternoon, just an hour ago. Sheryl Sandberg posted on Facebook she is leaving Meta after 14 years. Today, I'm sharing the news that after 14 years, I'll be leaving Meta. She says she didn't plan to stay this long. When I joined Facebook, I had a 2-year-old son and a 6-month-old daughter. I didn't know if this was the right time for a new and demanding role, but I wanted to give it a try. She said, I didn't expect to stay more than 5 years, but she's ended up there. Chief Operating Officer at Meta, Mark Zuckerberg's right-hand woman, for 14 years. She went through, of course, the passing of her husband, Dave. With some real ups and downs, and of course, the challenge of running a company that's under constant scrutiny from the feds and from the public, the whistleblower and all of that. Survived all of that.
If she had left after 5-6 years, she could have gone on lots of other things, but now she has kind of Facebook cooties.
She wrote a book called Lean In.
Like she has to work again?
No, in fact,
no.
Just in case you're interested, that's not what she's when I took this job in 2008, I would be in this role for 5 years. 14 years later, it's time for me to write the next chapter of my life. I'm not entirely sure what the future will bring, except giant bags of money. I have learned no one ever is. No, that's kidding. She didn't say that. I've learned no one ever is, but I do know it will include focusing more on my foundation and philanthropic work, which is more important to me now.
Because I have giant bags of money to give away.
Now than ever, given how critical this moment is for women. I think that the timing may have something to do with Roe v. Wade. I don't know. Also, she's getting married in the summer. She says, as Tom and I get married this summer, parenting our expanded family of 5 children. Our next few months, Mark and I will transition my direct reports. I'll leave the company this fall. She will stay on the board of directors.
She's going to run for office, y'all.
Oh.
Well, that's what I was wondering. Do you think she can? Do you think she has too many Facebook cooties?
Oh, yeah. No, because
really?
She'll
you
go someplace.
Facebook cooties are a thing?
She missed the California primary, so she won't be on the ballot for senator.
Oh, she's got to develop it. This takes time.
It would have to be a national office. It would have to
be 2024. She could be appointed to replace Diane.
Senate? God, that would be
actually,
amazing.
That might be the path, because Diane Feinstein is getting on, and it might be that she retires early, and Gavin Newsom, who I'm sure Sheryl Sandberg has very good ties with, would appoint her, and that would eliminate an election. And then she'd have a couple of years to serve in the Senate before she had to run for office.
That would be very interesting.
Huh. Do you think she might?
I don't think there would be a such thing as Facebook cooties, as Mr. Jarvis
you don't think
was
so.
Mentioning. No, I mean, considering how the rest of the governing bodies have been put into office here, regardless of their history and past or whatever, none of that stuff matters. It's just, you know, can you scratch the back of the right lobbyist at the right time kind of thing? And
also, name recognition is
I was about to say, she has name recognition.
Yeah, it's probably more important than anything, especially with women. Lean In was a very popular, very best-selling book about how women should, move forward in business and the world. I do think politics is in her future. So,
one form or another, she could also be appointed to some federal position, you know, ambassador to somewhere or something. I think she wants something more than that. I think she wants something with some clout.
But. Well, we could look up, because it's public record, Sheryl Sandberg's political contribution record.
Survey says.
We could. Most of Facebook's lobbying efforts are very right wing, so it would kind of be interesting.
She contributed quite a bit to Nancy Pelosi, to Women Making History, 2016, Zoe Lofgren, Act Blue, Amy Klobuchar, Hillary Victory Fund, very Democrat, Bennett Colorado Victory Fund, Leahy for Senator Committee. This is just in 2016. I think the total is more than 500,000. I'm sorry, is that right? $729,000 in. Wait a minute, I can't. The dollar sign is in a strange position on this. I don't.
Because it's so far away from the.
Have you seen that many zeros?
Like, I donated $72.
You broke it.
I get it. 171 donations in 2020, totaling $729,000. 2018, 425, the year before half.
So 2020, I'm curious to see. What was that?
Should we look at 2020s? Yeah, all right. I have to move ahead. 1900. In January 1st, 1900, she gave money to Finkenauer. There appears to be an error in this database.
Yeah.
Wow. 2020.
It was not adapted for Y2K.
Yeah. Wow. I clicked the link. Anna Eshoo, who's Democrat, Act Blue with Democrat.
Yeah, Eshoo's that district.
Mm-hmm. Tina Smith from Minnesota.
And very trying to go after tech.
Yeah. These are all, you know, the maximum, by the way, $2,800. She gave the Facebook PAC some money. Nancy Pelosi. So, yeah, very much liberal. Women Vote, Chris Kuntz in Delaware. So, yeah, I don't see, though, interestingly, Gavin Newsom... but maybe I'm looking in the wrong year.
Federal or
it's everything. This is political. This is, you know, it's all public record.
I know, but is it just? Is there a separate listing for local for state? There's separate reporting.
This all is state, so I don't. But no, this is all over the country. Let me see.
No, but I'm saying these are federal offices as opposed to
state offices.
I see what you're saying.
So there may be separate reporting for a state office.
State office. Okay.
I don't know.
Jackie Speer, People for Ben. Anyway.
Ben who?
Ben and Jerry. Come on, get with it. We only need first names here. She talks about Mark throughout her post and Tom, her fiance, who at first I thought was MySpace Tom, but it turns out.
Well, who was it she was dating who got in trouble recently? But she was trying to tell stories.
Yeah,
what's his name?
The CEO of Activision.
Activision, yeah.
Yeah, Kotkin.
That was not meant to be.
She is engaged and will marry Tom Berenthal, who's the founder of a marketing company, Kelton Global. She met through her brother-in-law, Rob. They'll have a blended family of seven.
Brother-in-law being...
Dave's brother.
Dave's brother. Wow.
Her ex's... not ex.
Or her
late husband's brother.
Late husband's.
So that's kind of nice.
They got. So did you read Mark's post yet?
No. Let's see. What does Mark say?
I put it up there. It looks like a consolidation of power. He's not going to replace Cheryl. There'll be a COO, but not a Cheryl COO. A pure revenue COO. More stuff reports to Mark.
Remember when Nick Clegg took over Global Affairs, we kind of thought, oh, this is a triumvirate. Mark runs the technical side.
Cheryl
runs the operations. And then Nick runs the outward-facing governmental relations. So that's interesting. Without Cheryl,
consolidation of power with Mark.
I was only 23 years old, and I knew barely anything about running a company. Cheryl architected our ads business, hired great people, forged our management culture, taught me how to run a company.
See more of Mark Zuckerberg. Try logging in or creating a new account, Leo.
No. No. Look how big that is, by the way. That takes over half the page.
Slap.
This is for those just listening. I am reading a Facebook post, but I do not have an account. So Facebook is...
it's a lower third, literally a lower third of the screen.
Really, yes.
Sign in, sign up, come on, schmuck.
One of the greatest legacies, the incredible team Cheryl's built. Nick Clegg is president of Global Affairs. Jennifer Newstead, chief legal officer. Javi, which is Javier Olivan, he runs,
business for Instagram and Facebook.
Okay,
like.
Yeah.
He's the revenue guy.
Right. Actually, he's been in the news lately with Instagram. He'll become the next COO, where he'll lead the integrated ads and business products, in addition to leading infrastructure, integrity, Just a little job. Analytics, marketing, corporate development, and growth teams. Boy, jeez. Javi, I hope you're getting
but he's
big
not
raise.
Cheryl.
Yeah. But this role will be different from what Cheryl has done. It'll be a more traditional COO role where he'll be focused internally and operationally. I think Mark really has already moved his attention to VR, to the metaverse. And so I really think that who's running the old legacy business is no longer that important to me, I would guess. As part of this, Molly Cutler, our VP Strategic Response, will join Javi's team and report to Naomi Gleit. Justin Osofsky will report to Chris Cox, who you remember came back. He was one of the founders of Facebook. So it is a bit of a reorg. This will happen this fall. But I really wonder how much Mark worries about Facebook anymore. You know, how important is that?
He's because it has cooties.
Right.
He's spending he should million. Worry about it because it's going to generate all of his revenue. It's like AOL was, which surprisingly.
But what
didn't
about.
Care about but we,
do you think? I think maybe Cheryl and he kind of planned this, saying, Cheryl's saying, you know, we're going to wind down Facebook. The metaverse is the next big thing. I don't want to really kind of start up in that project. Why don't you give Javi the day-to-day operations? You can focus your, did they say 18,000 engineers and $10 billion a year building this new metaverse? Focus on that. And Javi will, you know, keep things, keep the engine running so we continue to have funds. Nick will fend off.
So, Stacey, I think, you know, do they recognize, just to what you just said a minute ago, do they recognize that maybe it is AOL and the smart thing to do is to...
That's what I think.
Is to just let it kind of just, like AOL, keep bringing in some money, lots of money, but it's going to feed their next ambition.
I mean, yeah. And AOL still had to manage the dial-up business, as it were. So
they still do, I think, technically.
My father still pays $4.95 a month to them. I'm scared of canceling.
Yeah.
So
this is it's a big change. I have to think this is not a surprise to Mark, and that this is probably something they planned, maybe even is a beginning of.
Well, she stayed on the board. That's very important.
She's still on the board.
If you're doing something like this, she probably told him like a year ago, I'm getting itchy feet. Let's figure that. I mean, when you're the CEO, you are COO. When you're part of the triumvirate, you have a plan.
I've always thought that Mark had political ambitions, but Cheryl makes much more sense, really.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
She's much more palatable than Mark.
Yeah. She feels like she likes people, for instance. You know, I'm sorry, Anne.
She identifies as a person?
Yes, she identifies as a person, human.
Would the operations officer deal a little bit more tightly with the general counsel? Because you know there's more stuff probably just out in someone's hidden news feed that says, hey, we caught so-and-so doing this on that platform. We caught this executive leaking.
Nick Clegg runs interference with government. That's really
his policy
job.
And comms.
Yeah.
Clegg is.
But you're right. Javier would have to, you know, keep an eye on that. Yeah, he'd have his eyes on that.
But policy probably wouldn't come from him in this structure. It would come. You're right, Ant, to focus on chief counsel.
What do you think? Maybe Elon Musk should buy Facebook. It would be more than 40.
Elon Musk should not do anything else. He needs to take a nap.
Take a nap.
Lord.
Like a toddler. You need to take a nap.
Stacey, you missed two key Elon weeks, boy.
Oh, man.
Good. I was so glad. Man. I was just like, I'm going to wake up. This is all going to be over. But it's still happening.
Oh, yeah. It never ends.
It's still happening.
But you saw the memo that he sent out to executives.
Yes.
I haven't been online for the last 10 to 12 days.
What have you been doing?
I can't tell you anything.
How?
Have you been in a coma?
I've been watching reruns of Archer and Parks and Rec.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
I did my very best to disconnect because I was supposed to have been working a gig and no gig got canceled. So I said I'm gonna disconnect. Oh. I didn't even watch the show last week, even though I normally would. But I was like, I got to step away from work and. I couldn't tell you the first thing that's been really going on other than all of the violence and stuff that's been happening recently. But I don't know any of the tech news.
We've been trying to avoid talking about it because It's so horrific, and it's so depressing. I notice I wake up every morning depressed. It's just so I understand. I really understand. I'm jealous that you got to unplug. Unfortunately, you don't really get to unplug, do you? That stuff follows you around.
Yeah. So I worked really hard to try to disconnect these last couple of days. I felt bad thinking, oh, man, my first day back to work is the day of Twig, where I'm supposed to be reading all of this wonderful information that Mr. Howell has put into our rundown that you never even get to.
You do not need to read it. I just want your deep, heartfelt reaction to anything we say. And if it's bless his heart, that's fine.
This is evil episode, you know. This is the evil episode.
I see. 666.
I put that in
there. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
I'm glad I came back for this.
Thank God it's not Friday the 13th. Then we'd really be.
Zorgon is going to take over Leo's chair any minute.
Yeah. I'm Gozar, the key master. Well, Elon has a message for you, Ant.
Oh, boy.
Remote work is no longer acceptable. This is an email sent to the entire staff. Electrek got it. Anyone who wishes to do remote work must be in the office for a minimum, and I mean minimum, of 40 hours per week or depart Tesla. This is less than we ask of factory workers. If there are particularly exceptional contributors for whom this is impossible, I will review and approve those exceptions directly.
Wait, you're supposed to work 37 and a half hours. He's asking for more time than people should put in as a minimum.
Moreover, the office must be a main Tesla office, not remote branch offices unrelated to your job duties. For example, being responsible for Fremont Factory Human Relations, but having your office be in another state. Thanks, Elon. Second email, subject, to be super clear. By the way, he said, you know, I only spend 5% of my time on Twitter. Yeah. So clearly he's got the bandwidth to be writing this. Everyone at Tesla is required to spend a minimum of 40 hours in the office per week. Well, this is kind of reiterating. The more senior you are, the more visible must be your presence. That's why I lived in the factory so much, so that those on the line could see me working alongside them and saying, is he still here? Get rid of him. If I had not done that, Tesla long ago would have gone bankrupt. There are, of course, companies that don't require this, but when was the last time they shipped a great new product? It's been a while. Who's he talking about?
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it has, Elon. It's been a while.
Right, nobody has shipped a great new product in ever. Tesla has and will create and actually manufacture the most exciting and meaningful products of any company on Earth. This will not happen by phoning it in.
He is scared.
Scared or angry? I think he needs a nap. I think Stacy's right.
Yeah.
He looks like someone who is going a little unhinged. And I don't mean this lightly.
No, that's serious. Yeah. And I worry about him because you're right.
I don't know if I'm worried, but I do think
give him credit.
One of his close friends
should be out there and saying, look, this is what we require. We want our folks here. We're not doing hybrid. We're not doing remote. This is it, bottom line. So it's not all wishy-washy and anything, especially when people are looking for work. They know what the expectations are. And for some people, it's a very small percentage of people. They're fine with going to the office.
Says Ant, who's
true.
Remote today.
Who's at home?
Good point.
Oh, by
who's
the way.
Yeah, just for those who are listening, that's where Ant is, just so you know.
Yeah. I didn't say I was in this.
No, moment. We're very easygoing here. You're never going to get a memo like that from me. And we have a four-day work week, and we're still pretty much, you know, hybrid. It's up to you. And Binance had a job listing. Let me see if I can find it.
Because you want to work for Binance?
I think it says it. I think it says it all here. Let me see if I can find it. No, I don't. In fact, after reading this job listing, I'm afraid. I'm very afraid. Well, I'm not going to be able to find it. But it basically said, you know, kind of what Elon just said, really. Don't think you can work here, work a 40-hour week. You know, that's not how
that's
we...
That's the old Disney joke.
What was that?
If you don't come in on Saturday, don't bother coming in on Sunday.
Yeah, exactly. Do you think that's necessary? Do you think that really makes a difference? I mean, Apple does it. Technology companies do it historically.
Cheryl told a story in her post. Go ahead, Ant.
It depends on leadership. There's some folks that feel like you have to have these, you know,
but is the leader right?
No.
If they have the proof and the pudding that says, hey, being here has been productive and allowed us to produce X product with X amount of return on investment, yada, 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 then sure. But
you're very
generous. The last 2 years give lie to that.
Yeah, I think that's a fantasy. And I think there's a lot of evidence that, in fact, working that hard does not promote, you know, better work. Or
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Miss Stacy.
No, you go ahead. You go ahead.
No, I'm saying I agree with Mr. Laporte that it's a bit of a fantasy, but at the same time, I also respect the fact that someone could say, hey, these are my values for the workplace. And, you know, if you want to work here, we're happy to have you. But,
yeah,
you know, but if you don't want these, then
I completely agree. It's their right.
By. Yeah.
It's their right to say that. Yeah. I just don't know if they are right to say
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Stacy.
I was going to say, I think it's kind of a function of how productive you want to be as a company. Obviously, if you are working, I mean, yes, there's a point where it stops, but like I don't work 40 hours a week anymore because I don't have to make what I feel is a decent living. And I would say the compromise there is if you're a company that's like, yeah, I want my company to be okay. It's going to grow at this rate. I'm cool with that versus a more hard driving culture. And honestly, I don't think Americans are really the right people to talk to about this because we have been indoctrinated our whole life into like, we are really crazy. Like when I talk to my friends, almost anywhere else with the exception of like my friends in China, and some of them in Japan, they're just like, what is wrong with y'all?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here is, here's the Binance, from the recruitment site about the company. At Binance, we don't work. We live it. No one ever asks you to work overtime or checks if you show up late in the morning. Those concepts don't apply at Binance. We do whatever it takes to get whatever needs getting done. It ends up being a lot of overtime. We are always working. There's no off switch. If you have your sleeves rolled up and ready to sweat it for the long haul and be part of a team that will help to define finance for the world tomorrow, then read on. If not, you can save your lazy bum some reading.
Wow.
You know, part of that is like
run.
Crypto is kind of like a weird cult mentality anyway, so that kind of ties into that, you know,
by the, you know,
worldview.
I guess if you're going to get stock options and get rich, you might be willing to sacrifice your family life, your humanity, your sleep for something. I mean, you get rich, I guess.
That's worth it, right?
And then, yeah, for it some is, people, yeah. it's like creating the next, you know, creating the Mac or some great thing. But for most people, all they're doing is giving up their family life, their real life, their world, so somebody else can get rich.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
That's that weird American, like, they have a calling to do this. And, you know, very few jobs are a job that you could say have a calling, right? But we tend to want people to work like that. I think actually at a certain point in time, it might work for a lot of people. Like when you're young and hungry and coming out, and if you're like really interested in learning a lot really fast, I think that fits. But I don't think that that's how everyone would like it to be. And I think if that's the way the world were for everywhere and everyone, that would be horrible.
From Isabel Asher Hamilton, writing today in Business Insider, Elon Musk said working from home during the pandemic tricked people into thinking they don't need to work hard. He's dead wrong, economists say. Working from home does not make workers less productive, according to three economists the Insider interviewed. The only constraint on productivity was when workers had children at home they needed to look after. There's a lot of evidence, in fact, that working at home... Here's the Natasha Postol-Vinay, an economic and financial historian at the London School of Economics. Most of the evidence shows that productivity has increased while people stayed at home.
Yeah.
People spent less time commuting, so they could use some of that time to work. They got to spend more time with their family and sleeping, which meant they were happier and ended up being more productive.
You know, I'm reminded, Leo, of when I last had a salaried job, and it was a really good salary, I will say. I would sit there some days, and this is really why I chose to quit. I would sit there some days and I would say, I haven't done much of anything of value to this company today. They paid me this much money today, and I didn't actually do anything because I had to sit here on my rump,
right?
Because that's what we do. And that was soul disturbing, right? As opposed to thinking I can get something done.
Who hasn't had who working in an office hasn't had that experience where you know, first some guy comes over, asks you how your weekend was, and then you got to go to a meeting in which you have nothing to yep. add, and then it's lunchtime and you got a couple of martinis because the boss, you know, was drinking.
Back of the day.
Yeah. And
boy.
By the end of the day, you go, what
lunch meetings were great.
You missed that part. You did miss it. We had Korean. We had Korean for lunch. You could have had Korean, Andy. Come on in.
Yeah.
That's our way of bribing people to get them into the year. Lisa likes to have people around. She's very social, and for her, in the work she's doing with the people she's working with, our sales team, our marketing team, our continuity team, having them there so that there's some back and forth, and she can say, "What's this?" It's more efficient for her, and I understand that. I don't think our hosts work better here than they would work at home. Our producers don't work better here than they work at home. Our editors need the equipment here, but they've been working at home a lot, and it's been working fine. So.
I'm way more productive here in my studio.
Yeah. Well, I would think so.
Way more productive.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
but
I mean, we miss talking to you.
Most of my adult life, you know,
right.
it's just sort of built
and
into
when
me
you
now.
Worked as in IT, you kind of have to be there, right? mm-hmm. You know, unless all the servers are in your house.
I was going to say,
I was right there. I was at home most of the time in my IT world because everything was remote connected if I needed to.
There you go. You didn't need to be.
Again, I got more done because I didn't have people walking up asking me if I watched the game when they know I already watched the game.
Right.
You know.
You told that story about your convincing your boss to let you go home and work, and it worked better.
Yeah, I did. I did. And the boss is like, well, okay. Well, since you're sending me this email at 2 in the morning.
I guess that's proof. I always send my boss emails in the middle of the night.
And you learn how to put the time in the email. That could be it. I'm such a good programmer that I learned to send the email out while I was snoring. But yeah,
I work for iHeart doing the radio shows mm-hmm. by Premier, and my boss is the president of Premier. I'm baffled. I will send her an email. I sent her an email Memorial Day at 11:48 p.m. Before midnight, she'd responded. I mean, within minutes, she responds instantly. And I'm almost now, it's almost a game. And I think that's partly because the CEO of iHeart, Bob Pittman, is kind of that kind of guy.
Yeah,
he is. Yeah, if you didn't,
I used to work with him.
Yeah, right? I sent you an email where you didn't respond. Are you what are you doing?
Mogul.
Sleeping? He's a mogul. There you go.
Yeah, it's mogul moments.
Interesting.
He's one of those people who only need 4 hours of sleep and don't understand everyone else.
And I love Julie. You would love Julie because she's a country. They're out of Nashville, and she's very relaxed and friendly and country, and she's just the sweetest person. And I kind of feel bad for her because I'm sure she'd like to have a mint julep about 5:30 p.m. and just relax.
That's Kentucky, sir.
Yeah.
That's Kentucky.
Oh, that's right. What do they drink in Tennessee? Oh, good old Jack Daniels. I'd like a little Lynchburg liquor and just relax. Put my feet up on the barrel and watch the hound dog sleep.
Okay.
Unbutton the top button on my britches.
I don't know if you've ever been to Nashville, man.
No, it's not like that at all. I know.
Nash Vegas is more like
it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Everybody's making it. Everybody's doing it. They go. All right, let's take a little break. Then we will talk about another huge story. This, you know, it's funny. This is normally a dead season, like because of summer breaks and stuff. But some of the biggest stories of the week have come out in the last couple of days. Supreme Court rules on the Texas social media law. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. And then, of course, we're going to spend an hour and a half talking about Johnny Depp and Amber Heard. But next.
No.
Just teasing. It's okay. Elon Musk. But actually, Elon Musk is the Depp Heard trial of the tech industry, isn't it? It's the thing that you can't look away from.
I did. I'm proud. I did not one minute. Not one minute did I watch it. Well, you were in prison, Stacey. You had nothing else to do.
But I avoided it like the plague.
Yeah, it was hard, but I did. Yeah. I can't wait. We are going on a cruise. It's going to be fun. to Alaska with the Twit fans, 100 strong. It's a little more than a month, about 6 weeks off. And I don't know about you, but when I'm going on a cruise, I start to think about my wardrobe. And that's why I went to our sponsor, Indochino, and I got myself some cruise wear. I almost don't want to say it. For those of you who are going on the cruise, and I know a few of you are in our chat room and in our Club Twit, I have some of the things I got from Indochino. I can't wait to. I have a purple velvet dinner jacket with satin lapels. It's so beautiful. I can't wait. A tuxedo. I'm going to wear a tuxedo. That'll be my tuxedo. And now, it's not the only thing you can get in Indochino. Indochino is actually a great place to shop for any kind of event, whether you're going to be a groom in a wedding party, a lucky guest. Weddings are coming up, wedding season this month. You want to look your best for a wedding? Look at these. I mean, they are so sharp. I wore a couple of weeks ago, I wore my purple silk jacket, which I found out it looks, it's just like silk, but it's actually wool, but it's just beautiful. It's silky, smooth. And here's the thing. It's like, it is, in fact, having a custom tailor. Because your suits come from Indochino, you get measured. You can either go to Indochino and get measured, or go to a tailor and get measured, or measure yourself. But they fit perfectly like a glove. They're tailored. It's not XL, XXL. It's not that. They're tailored perfectly for your proportions. So you look great. You feel confident. You don't have to. You know, sometimes when you get dressed up, you feel like you don't. It's uncomfortable. Like you don't belong in these clothes. You belong when you put on your Indochino suits or jackets or shirts or pants. You feel like they belong. Every detail is perfect, customized to your desires. Suit, shirt, dinner jacket, and the prices. Given that these are completely 100% custom tailored, are really good. Every suit made to your measurements. You can customize every detail. Monograms, fabrics. You can get great statement linings. And yes, they're not all purple velvet jackets. They have a whole variety of subtle looks as well. But it's nice to have a choice. Indochino suits, custom tailored, start at $429. Shirts from $79. Custom fitted shirts, casual wear. You'll get a wardrobe personalized to your taste without spending a fortune. You know, I was going to save this dinner jacket for the cruise, but maybe I'll break it out over the next few days because it's so beautiful. I love it so much. And they're always adding new pieces and options. So I always go back to the site. Look at that white suit. I might have to order that. Oh, and once they have your measurements, you know, you can, of course, they guarantee it. The fit's guaranteed. So you can, if you get it and it doesn't fit, you can send it back or have it adjusted. That's not a problem. But once they get it right, which they have my exact measurements now. Then you just want to go on the site and go, yeah, I want a white suit. Sure. They're always adding new stuff. You can always stay in trend. It's definitely stylish. You won't feel frumpy. They have a relaxed yet refined approach to spring suits. Their new spring pastels are coming out. Spring, summer too. And I think the fall collection is just about to come out. If you've got a big day coming up, getting the perfect look is no big deal with Indochino, Indochino. Get $50 off any purchase of $399 or more. Just use the promo code TWIT at Indochino.com. I love my Indochino suits. $50 off any purchase of $399 or more. Indochino.com. Promo code TWIT. You will see me wearing these in the cruise. I think I look very sharp. I'm not wearing it now. I should have worn it for today, but I wanted to surprise everybody. Indochino.com. Don't forget the offer code. TWIT. I was really surprised when the news crossed the wire yesterday that the U.S. Supreme Court halted that horrific Texas social media law. Instead of just one justice, it would have been, it could have been shadow docketed. And I think it would have been Justice Alito that could have said, no, we're not going to review this. So just to refresh your memory, Texas legislature.
Thank you.
Yes. Oh, it's a horrible bill. Texas legislature approved this, A court blocked it. Then of course, the Texas appealed, the Attorney General appealed, and the Fifth District Court unblocked the block. Now, if you want to know more about why this social media law is so bad, you got to just read Mike Masnick on Tech Dirt. In fact, let me pull up some of his articles on this.
Who's always so brilliant.
Yeah.
With stuff. It's
one of those laws that essentially, well, here's his headline. Just how incredibly effed up is Texas social media content moderation law? He points out.
Let me tell you.
He points out, for instance, remember in Buffalo, a couple of shootings ago, it's hard to keep track, I know, but the guy who did this was streaming it on Twitch. Masnick says Twitch could have been sued for taking the stream down. It opens a social network with more than 50 million average U.S. users to lawsuits by anybody for any kind of moderation. Litigator Ken White did a great thread on Twitter, which we commented on a week ago, I think, or 2 weeks ago. And I think we've probably gone through this. It was, in effect, until yesterday, when the U.S. Supreme Court actually reversed the decision of the Fifth Circuit. Jeff, were you surprised? I was surprised. I did not expect that.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be Alito just saying, we'll let it be. But the decision itself and who voted which way.
That was a real surprise. Yeah,
I still can't figure out. I don't understand.
Just to be clear, there is a trial going on. This was a preliminary injunction by a lower court saying, no. Until this is resolved, this law is not enforceable. The Fifth District said, oh, yes, it is. It's enforceable. The Supreme Court has merely said, no enforcement of this law until the case works its way through the courts. So the law is not gone. Right now what's happening is there will be a court case, and that will be decided. And you know what? At that point, it may go back to the Supreme Court. So it's kind of unclear exactly. You know, Google said the measure would unconstitutionally bar platforms from removing neo-Nazi and Ku Klux Klan crap or Russian propaganda about Ukraine.
Sir, was this measure brought up just because they felt the tech companies are
yes,
screwing with freedom of speech?
Yeah, and you remember the Florida law that initially exempted Disney?
Oh, right. Okay.
And then after Disney, yeah. After Governor DeSantis decided Disney was a woke corporation, yeah, we're going to include Disney on this one, which just shows this is pure politics. Both of them really were Republican legislators saying in effect to Twitter, you should never have banned Donald Trump. Now see what happens. It was really about conservative legislators saying, big tech, particularly Facebook and Twitter, I think Facebook may or may not be, it's not liable in Florida now because its net worth has gone down, but I think it's still liable in Texas. These guys are left-leaning, and they have to be held accountable for their moderation decisions. But what it really does is opens up all moderation decisions to suit. So the U.S. Supreme Court, it was close, 5-4, said, no, we're going to block this law until it works its way through the courts.
And Ari Cohn, I put in a thread, Ari Cohn says that there's also thinking that the status of the Florida law does also have impact here. So it's both together. And it also means the court is going to take this up.
Ultimately, they will have to
treat it seriously.
Yeah, ultimately, I think this is in a way saying, yeah, just hold on, we're going to rule on this. But in the meanwhile, because it's clearly, at least in my opinion, and I'm not a lawyer, but Kathy Gelis, who is, felt this way too. It's unconstitutional. It's government telling
but
a private
who knows
business
what the Constitution what is.
Well, I know. So the dissent, the people who said, no, this law should stand, were Neil Gorsuch, Clarence Thomas, Samuel Alito, the very reliable.
So far, not surprising.
Right-wing judges, and Elena Kagan.
Hers was procedural in a way that I don't understand. I haven't seen.
We don't know because there was no written dissent, so we don't know.
Yeah, someone was trying to speculate why it would be based on her prior, and I still don't understand it.
Well, the government does order private businesses to serve citizens under like ADA and things like that. Maybe there's something like that. I'm really stretching. I don't know.
It's just unknown. Let me look at Ari's thread here.
It's complicated.
I mean, oh, they did a spaces, so. Decision comes on the heel of the 11th Circuit's ruling. Florida's law also violates the First Amendment. Yeah, I don't know. Do they consider? And by the way, that has not been appealed to the Supreme Court yet, and that's Clarence Thomas who will decide that one. The votes to grant the applications to vacate the Fifth Circuit's decision allowing enforcement of the law in favor were Justice Roberts. Okay. Breyer, you'd expect that. Sotomayor, you'd expect that. Roberts is kind of a swing, but so that's two liberals, the Chief Justice, and Kavanaugh and Barrett, the two newest Supreme Court justices.
The Trumpiest of them all, yeah.
There was an Alito dissent. I should say there was a dissent by Alito, but Kagan did not join that dissent, so she never talked about her reasons
against. And the dissent, it says here at number four, was ostensibly procedural. They argue that the plaintiffs, says Ari, haven't demonstrated a substantial likelihood of success on the merits because it's quite unclear whether existing law supports their challenge. So it's a hall of mirrors here. The double, triple, quadruple negatives. It's hard to figure out.
Okay. Yeah. Well, so I think you're right. I think, I'm not really equipped. If Kathy were here, maybe she would be to go through this thread. They, but I think the issue is going to end up in the Supreme Court again. It's just got to work its way there once the courts in Florida and Texas.
What's scary about the courts is the fact that this didn't get shot down once and for all at the first level of court to say this is patently ridiculously unconstitutional.
Yeah, the fact that it got through the Fifth Circuit, they were just ruling on the injunction. So we haven't yet heard a court rule on the law itself, actually, the injunction.
No, we have not.
We'll see. Anyway, kind of a surprise from the Supreme Court. You just never know what those wacky folks in black robes are going to do.
Yep.
Just never know.
I love this moment when Leo's looking down the list thinking, what's it going to be?
Well, let me ask y'all. So we've had court decisions around, like, is it fair for, like, the president to block people? So a politician, is it okay for that person to block people on, like, Twitter or other social media sites?
He's official.
With something like this.
Well, remember, they ruled that President Trump could not block people on Twitter because he was on his feet as POTUS.
Yeah, as Donald Trump he could, but
yeah,
as POTUS,
but as POTUS he couldn't because...
Okay.
You know, you're supposed to listen to the people.
You're using a governmental instrument.
Crazy
to communicate.
But you're supposed to listen to the people.
Oh, that small detail.
Yeah.
That would be like blocking your phone number from calling the White House.
Yes.
Can't do that.
That's a better way to do that. Yes. We don't want to hear from that anymore. Yeah.
For a long time, though, you know, and I know that we now have separate accounts for certain elected officials, but, you know, well, I guess we're just figuring out. Never mind.
Yeah.
Big, I think very interesting letter from some of the most renowned and respected technologists in the world, including Bruce Schneier, who we've had on this show, is a very top-level security guy. Miguel de Icaza, who was at Microsoft, he very well-known programmer. Principal engineer at Google Cloud, Kelsey Hightower, saying... Watch your wallet, blockchain, and the burgeoning cryptocurrency industry should be regulated.
Danger, danger, they say.
Danger, danger. Schneier says the claims that the blockchain advocates make are not true. It's not secure. It's not decentralized. Nope. Any system where you forget your password and you lose your life savings is not a safe system.
Yep. But that's decentralization, right?
The crypto industry. So what they're essentially writing is a counter to the lobby, crypto industry lobby, which spends millions of dollars getting Congress to support the crypto industry. They're saying, well, we want to provide a counter argument. We're counter lobbying. I'm sorry, Ant. You said that decentralization and...
Well, I was saying if you lose your password because there's nobody else keeping track of your passwords allowing you
well, that's to right. Be able that's to manage
the forgotten
yeah.
password, that's part of it being decentralized, right? Isn't that what you sign up for?
Well, Schneier says it's not decentralized. And I think, you know, that might be referring more to NFTs, which... are in theory decentralized, right. But in fact, OpenSea
controls
them. But
that's all under OpenSea.
In fact, we already saw that because when OpenSea decided to block an NFT to take it off the...
But OpenSea just last week said that they were going to shift to a protocol like Blue Sky shifts social to a protocol. So there is that movement to go the other way. But you're right, Ant. If it's totally decentralized, there's kind of no appeal to control it as a result. So... Yeah, this is kind of both sides of the coin here. It is decentralized, ergo it's hard to protect people. Right. It's not decentralized in the sense that OpenSea can still be a single point of failure for at least NFTs.
Yeah.
The letter goes on to say, crypto assets have been the vehicle for unsound and highly volatile speculative investment schemes that are being actively promoted to retail investors who may be unable to understand their nature and risk. I've been saying this for a long time. And further, they go on to say crypto and blockchain tech serve no real purpose. Now, I have, and I think, Stacey, you have been, and a number, I know, Ant, you have, we've been saying, well, maybe the underlying technology like blockchain has some value. They don't even acknowledge that. Miguel de Acasa said the computational power equivalent to what you would do in a centralized way, you know, through a bank with a $100 computer, we're essentially wasting millions of dollars worth of equipment because we've decided we don't trust the banking system.
Oh, well, that's only for financial stuff. So I would take that with a grain of salt.
Right. Good point.
Although these guys, Schneier for sure. By the way, Tim Bray, who is also one of the signers, this is the letter is at concerned.tech. And it's to Schumer, McConnell, Pelosi, McCarthy, all the leadership in Congress. Was also signed by Tim Bray, who will be on Tech News Weekly tomorrow. Good get, Micah Sargent. Good guy to get. Tim's
nice.
Tim's a great guy. Cory Doctorow signed it. I would have signed it. I kind of agree. I think there's
at least caution in financial areas. Yeah, I agree.
Molly White, the famous creator of Web3, is going great. That website. Jamie Zawinski, who was a developer at Netscape, very well known in the business.
Molly line. White signed the letter too. Oh,
yeah, Molly
that.
White. Yeah, and you can sign it too if you want at concerned.tech. I think they really just want to counter a lot of lobbying from companies that stand to gain a lot of money.
As Stacey would say, if I may, Stacey, this is something we have to discuss. We can't just rush into it. And I'm all for let's try out the internet and see what it is. But when it comes to people's life savings, you've got to be a little more deliberate.
Well, and part of it is, I mean, we're a nation of people, I mean, especially in the U.S., of get-rich-quick schemers. I mean, good Lord.
Yeah.
So I feel like some of this feels so uniquely American and weird because of that. But yeah, you're right. Anyone saying I'm going to put my money in crypto, that's just psychotic. But it's not psychotic if, you know, 6 months ago you said it and you were walking away with, you know, an extra $40,000 on $40. So I sort of get it. But I'm also like, no.
He says blockchain solutions are often, I'm talking about Bruce Schneier here. This is a Wired opinion piece he wrote in 2019. There's no good reason to trust blockchain technology. He said blockchain solutions are often much worse than what they replace. He says the interesting kinds of blockchains include, you know, currency, a digital token. He says there are private blockchains, but they're completely uninteresting. they're not anything new. They're distributed append-only data structures with a list of individuals authorized to add to it. Consensus protocols have been studied in distributed systems for more than 60 years. He says the only reason to operate one is to ride on the blockchain hype. But the public blockchain, he says, is it actually good for anything? Well, it's all a matter of trust.
there have been efforts to say that journalism should be there because it can't be erased then. But that's the other issue. That's part of Anne's point about being distributed. It's distributed in a way that there's stuff you might want to take down, and you can't then because it's too distributed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think that's just knowing the trade-offs. I mean, yeah. I feel like as human beings who talk about this, we do a terrible job in politics, in media, of explaining these things. Like, this is good for this thing, but it's not good for everything.
Right.
He says
what
blockchain does is shift trust in people, in institutions, in banks, to technology. You need to trust the crypto, the protocols, the software, the computers, the network. And you need to trust them absolutely because they're often single points of failure. We've seen this lately in a lot of ways. When that trust turns out to be misplaced, and there is no recourse. If your Bitcoin exchange gets hacked, you lose all your money. If your Bitcoin wallet gets hacked, you lose all your money. If you forget your login credentials, you lose all your money.
Verizon and say that I am Leo Laporte, can you please send me a text and verify?
Well, that's right. But he does point out, and I think this is true, that these systems, these other non-blockchain systems, there's been a lot of work to make them secure. There's laws and regulations. There's backstops that limit risks in the case of fraud. There's anti-counterfeiting technologies. There's internet security technologies. So, and the institutions have a reputation to maintain. So I think he makes there is no reputation to be maintained if the protection of the blockchain fails, which it keeps doing time and time again, Ant, and you got to acknowledge that. There's no recourse. Look at Seth Green. Bye-bye, Bored Ape.
Right?
Yep, bye-bye.
So, but centralization, too, has problems. Centralization means you're in the control of one Elon Musk or one Mark Zuckerberg. Centralization means that you can be controlled by the Chinese government. There's no ideal here. Jack Dorsey tweeted a few weeks ago, right before the announcement of the Musk efforts, that centralized identity was a mistake and he felt responsible for it. And that's thus, I think, Blue Sky. And so we got to find middle grounds, and I think Stacey's exactly right. It depends on the use. One is good for one, and one is good for the other.
I still stand by NFTs being cool for artists to be able to get paid.
I just think if you want to get paid, sell something. Ask somebody to donate your money. I don't know that
Patreon.
You need the NFT. I don't know what the NFT is.
You don't need the NFT, but what I'm saying is it's nice knowing that there is another option out there beyond the world of PayPal, beyond the world of, hey, buy prints from antpruitt.com/prints. But unfortunately, there's scammers out there that sort of screwed all of that up, and there's people out there just making these 8-bit pieces of art and selling them for a gazillion dollars for whatever reason that I've never really agreed with. But then there's the other end of the spectrum of someone like Elise Swopes, who's made some just beautiful art using her phone, and she's made a nice chunk of change off of it, and she continues to just do it and get paid and not really be all scammy about it, you know?
I would submit that if somebody donates to you through an NFT, that their chief interest is not your art. Their chief interest is speculation on your art. And if they really loved your art, they would buy your art, or they would donate to you with a Patreon or something like that, and you could do fine. Mm-hmm. If the only way you're selling your art is through an NFT, then that's because people think it's going to be valuable. I mean, it's true of fine art as well. You know, that's how...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I mean, that's
Basquiat
how the art market
got,
is...
got famous and rich and died. But, anyway, I think that... I think it's an important discussion. Honestly, these are people I respect to the nth degree, confirming my bias, which I've had, you know, has changed. My views on this have changed as I've watched this kind of fall apart.
But let's even say Bitcoin, though. I mean, if you're in the United States and you got family back in Colombia, if you had to go through Western Union, you lost a huge amount of money to that. You could now transfer money from dollars to Bitcoin to pesos for next to nothing.
Not at all.
There
Wait
are
a
other
minute,
uses. All
not
I'm saying
at
is
all.
There are
no.
other uses.
Not at all. It costs you far more than Western Union.
It does.
The gas
fees
are astronomical.
That's right. It does now. It didn't in the beginning,
and,
but it does now.
And it's much slower. It's unpredictably slow unless you pay a lot of money for the gas fees.
Yeah.
And finally, the risk of getting ripped off is
exorbitant. Yes.
Well, the risk of it being volatile while you're doing that even is bad. All I'm saying is,
well, and you also look at. Oh, go on.
Just all I'm saying, it is worth exploring alternatives to the present fiat currency system. I'm not against that. I'm just not saying that blockchain gravy makes all meatloaf taste good. Sorry, Stacey.
Right. And I would say that anytime you explore alternatives to the current status quo, be it blockchain, be it some magical sticker-based economy that, you know, a bunch of seven-year-olds come up with, if it catches on, the powers that be will seek to capitalize on it for their own benefit. And because they have attention, they have money, they have lobbying power, they will be able to do it. And I mean, I've never bought into this, like, decentralization equals automatic good and automatic to the power to the people. And I think a lot of people did, and they looked at it uncritically for things. Mm-hmm. And that's why I appreciate this letter. So I don't know.
Yeah.
The only thing I think the blockchain is good for is automated contracts for, like, machine to machine. But that's just me.
Yeah. There's uses of it. It's a clever technology, but it doesn't bring a determinism either way. Unless you're Madison Cawthorn.
Oh, I don't want to do that story. So somebody in the chat room is pointing out that Lightning is a free way to do Bitcoin. And that's true. There is a Lightning network and Cash App is using it.
Oh, yeah.
But that's called re-centralizing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right,
and that's the problem. You've got to make it easy for people.
That's
one of the trade-offs,
right?
Yeah.
Suddenly, you are reliant on a third party.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think when Cory Doctorow was on, we were talking about the idea of putting your car repair information on a blockchain, so that when you bought a car, you would know exactly what it had been through. And he said, how is that any better than the system we have? It requires whoever does the repairs to do it. If they don't, it's still not there. It's not an improvement. It's just this fairy dust that we're waving on stuff to get people to go, that's new and cool and neat. That must be better. It's not. It's just not. And it's causing a lot of people to lose a lot of money. So, and by the way, this has nothing to do with my Bitcoin wallet. I'm completely happy with my Bitcoin wallet. It's fine.
We know you don't care about that thing.
I don't. And honestly, it would, if I had unlocked it, it would have been sold long ago. I'm just going to hold on to it. Maybe if Bitcoin ever goes back to even more, I'll because I know I can unlock it. It's just a matter of sitting down and doing it. Has nothing to do with that. I have not been.
Sure. Are you sure?
Yes. Absolutely. Have not been ripped off in any way.
Leo, do you object? Fine. So cyber currency, danger, danger, Will Robinson. Do you think that, to Stacey's point, that blockchain has good uses?
I think that remains to be seen. Bruce Schneier doesn't, and I think he's a lot smarter than I am.
Yeah, but he has blinders just like everybody else. I mean, there are things I think are a great idea or things I think are terrible that still come to pass, and I'm like, oh. Well, that didn't work out as badly as I thought it might.
They don't have the security risk that currency has.
Oh, see. Well, currency has a security risk, too.
Yeah.
If
you go to the ATM and pull out $1,000 and give it to somebody, it's gone. There's no recourse. The bank won't give it back to you. There's no recourse. It's gone. So.
Or you just drop it on the ground and someone finds it.
Right. All right. Yeah, I don't want to do the.
That's fine. Well, just the fact that he's.
Of course he is. So is everybody. They're all scammers, right? They're all scammers. Let's talk about, because you did a tweet about this morning, which I thought was good. Let's talk about Star Wars. Yeah. Obi-Wan.
Oh, that was yesterday. Your Twitter's out of whack.
I choose not to follow the latest tweets, but the best tweets.
I see.
You are the cream rising to the top there, Ed.
You have risen to the top.
Well, thank you.
What is the controversy? It's this casting, this, what do they call it? Racially blind casting
Moses Ingram. She's a key actor in this new series, Kenobi. She's a, what do they call it? A Jedi hunter, essentially. And she's a black woman. And
she played Jolene in The Queen's Gambit.
Well, like there you go. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, she was in Queen's Gambit.
She was the black best friend from the orphanage who everybody loved.
Oh, I loved her in that.
I totally forgot about that. That was a good show too.
Yeah.
I was looking at her face and I'm like, that woman is familiar.
So
she's been getting a lot of backlash, people sliding into her DMs, Star Wars fans, quote Star Wars fans, and just attacking her and basically telling her how horrible she's been for that role and she shouldn't have been there, no talent, blah, 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 and racist this and racist that.
It was more about her being a black person in a role that they thought should be white.
Should have been somebody else, a white person. You know, so one of my friends, you know, she brought it up. She says, you know what, it's the typical equation of she's a woman and she's a black woman. And she's already got those chips stacked up against her.
Yep.
But it's unfortunate, but she's killing this role. I mean, she's absolutely crushing this role. But
I feel like
Star Wars has then come back and said, you know what? We are behind her. And if you want to be a racist, you know, don't be a racist. We got 20 million different species out there, something along those lines in those tweets. And I appreciate the fact that they stood up for her. And publicly made a statement about, hey, we back her up. And Ewan McGregor, he went online and did a video as well and said, hey, I got her back too. So screw the rest of you racist folks.
Star Wars tweeted, there are more than 20 million sentient species in the Star Wars galaxy. Don't choose to be a racist. I think that's fair. That's fair.
Great line.
Well, it's unique because after, what was the movie with... it's the only Star Wars movie I really thought was awesome. The one with Kelly Tran and John Boyega.
Oh, that was good. It was really
good. Oh, you're going to get in trouble here, Stacey.
I know. Stacey, go to Stacey.
Not us, Stacey.
They did not. Disney did not. I mean, John Boyega, is that how I say his name? I don't know. He actually said that he felt like Disney didn't stand up for him against all this. So apparently Disney's like, oh, well, we can't do this a third time. I mean...
Right.
Yeah.
And you know what? That other Star Wars was amazing. And then they, like, did the third episode of it. And they were like, yeah, we're going to take all that goodness we threw out away because everybody complained so much, those old Star Wars loving
people.
Where
is Kelly... So Kelly Tran's gone. They haven't done any more with her? Or him?
Didn't she
I can't
die?
Remember his name. Yeah, maybe she dies in it. I don't know.
Good question.
I don't watch Star Wars that intently.
Anyway, well, good for them for standing up for her.
That was part of my, I need to step away from online.
I kind of got that feeling when I saw you. All right, I'm at it. Well, you like this. Hashtag Swedengate trending on Twitter right now. It turns out Swedish people, as a rule, don't serve food to guests.
I asked a friend about this, and she told me that was totally true. And I just was like,
are you serious?
I'm trying to imagine the situation. Well, and apparently some households in Sweden, when you would, and I think it's mostly kids, I guess, they'd be playing over at their friend's house and the family would eat dinner, but they wouldn't invite the friend would stay up in the playroom or somebody's room.
Oh, that's just rude.
Family would eat and send it back. Well, I asked my friend about this and she's like, she grew up in Sweden. And she's like, yeah, if you spent the night at someone's house, like even in the morning for breakfast, like your friend would go down and have like eggs or cereal or something. And you would just be up in their room. And I'm like, did you pack your own snack? I mean, like.
This is an article in the Independent by Linda Johansson. She says, as a child growing up in Gothenburg, I remember not really caring at all that I wasn't being fed. I just kept playing and had a nice quiet time while the other family had their dinner. It's because they didn't want to mess up my family's plans. They figured, well, your family probably going to feed you dinner, so you don't have to eat dinner with us. It's just cultural.
I got to tell you.
Did you get the map?
No, that's just weird.
Is that how they do it in South Kakalaki?
I've been in similar situations in my little black communities in South Kakalaki, and the parents would literally come to the door, hey, y'all come eat. Well, aunt, I don't know what your mom or your grandmother is doing, so you just
they
because
don't
my mom or my grandmother would fuss about food being wasted.
That's fair. Because we know your parents are going to feed you, so, you know, go home.
Or you turn into call your mother or call your grandmother and see if it's okay that you eat here.
Oh, there you go. I like that.
Well, yeah, we had that too.
Yeah.
But you'd invite you. You'd be like, you come down and you'd be like, hey, mom, can so-and-so stay for dinner? And she'd be like, sure. Or no, we don't have enough. I mean, that was totally a legit thing to do. But then you go up and you're like, all right, you got to go home for dinner.
Yeah.
He didn't leave
them
sitting upstairs.
That's pretty funny.
So I put the map.
They left me sitting outside a time or two with the baseball or the basketball.
Yeah, I can actually remember that. Yeah. I didn't even grow up in Sweden. All right, where's the map? What line?
So the bottom of other in the rundown is somebody did a map about this as to what usually happens. So all of Scandinavia, including Denmark and Iceland, is no food for you. Get your own lutefisk.
What?
As somebody said on Twitter.
So,
whereas
the red ones are very unlikely to give you food. Sweden's in there. The pink ones are unlikely to give you food. The blue ones are usually yes. But notice it's the southern Europe where they're almost always. You know, in Italy and Spain, they're going to make you eat.
They're
going to make you. I don't care if you've got dinner waiting for you. You're eating now. So it might really have more to do with climate. I don't know.
I don't.
It's culture.
It's culture.
I guess. Culture. I can't imagine eating in front of someone and not offering them food. That is just.
But
weird.
I'm selfish. So
I'm telling you, the warmer the climate, the more likely you'll be fed. So in Texas, you're going to be fed.
Yeah.
In Canada, I'm not so sure. What is it? Canadians.
Maybe.
We have a lot of Canadians.
Maybe.
Canadians in the chat room. Canadians in Club Twit. What happens when you were a kid and you went over and you visited? Would you get food? Would you get fed?
It's probably a kindly worded debate. Some food never happened.
I'm so sorry, but we can't feed
you. So Wally Searick explains on Twitter, and it's a link at the bottom of that story, that in Norse culture, hospitality, providing food, drink, lodging, was a duty of higher status individuals toward people of lower status. Act of receiving hospitality created an obligation or debt on the part of the recipient who couldn't afford it. That's my parenthetical. So hospitality not only brought honor to the giver, it had the potential to bring shame to the recipient. Norse culture has progressed through the Middle Ages, was incredibly personally violent. There's that, too. You took my lutefisk and didn't give me any. Pah! Off with your head. Right? So people fought duels, violently extracted debts, and squeezed renters. All this from Wally Searick on Twitter. One of the challenges of the Protestant church in Scandinavia post 30 Years' War was to create a culture that tamped down on personal violence. Because as somebody said to me some time ago, I read something that said, you know, Sweden, you know, ransacked all of Europe, and today they're Sweden. So people change. So they tried to change the culture. But the root of a lot of impersonal violence was a competition for status and extraction of payment. That's really interesting, isn't it?
So in a way, it would be implying that I am higher status than you to invite you to eat.
I give you
food.
Well,
you're
that's
probably
true,
too poor
I
to
have,
eat. Yeah.
When I was growing up, I would have friends who... Like, my parents tracked who I ate, you know, because, like, as a kid, you don't necessarily know. But they had a definite reciprocity thing that
we owe somebody
other
now,
friends
right.
of mine.
Oh, yes.
So that's interesting. But, like, my friends who, like, I had a friend who was Filipino, and God help us, we could not go to that house without, like, there was food always.
I'm telling you, it's climate.
This is another great tweet here from him. The church, with the framing of early Protestant humanists, began to promote the ideal of the free member of society, owing no one and owed nothing. If the culture could get rid of the interactions that caused friction, people could live more peaceful lives.
So you're proud and you owe you. We're going to just you go have your dinner at your place because. It's cultural. It's fine.
It is cultural. It is
now,
cultural.
Meanwhile, Tim Hortons.
Tim Hortons thought Canada was cool.
Well, they did get caught by Canadian watchdogs. Tim Hortons app tracked people illegally, according to Canadian watchdogs. The app would show where users lived, where they worked, and the probe showed no legitimate reason for the tracking. The company was told today to shut off that capability after an investigation by federal and provincial authorities. Found that Tim Hortons app misled many users to believe information would only be accessed when the app was in use. Nope. As long as the device was on, the app was continually collecting location data. The app used location data. It generated an event every time users entered or left a Tim Hortons competitor.
A major
sports event or their home or workplace.
Timmy.
This came to light 2 years ago when a story by the Financial Post. It took a while for the government, the wheels to turn. But Tim Hortons continued to collect vast amounts of location data for a year after shelving plans to use it for targeted advertising. So they weren't even going to use it for targeted advertising.
What did they say as to why they were doing this?
They say, sorry. We'll implement the recommendations in the report right away. They included deleting any remaining location data, directing third-party providers to do the same, establishing and maintaining a privacy management program, and reporting back to the authorities with details on the measures it has taken to comply with the recommendations. We're so sorry.
Free donuts for everybody.
We're sorry. Timbits for all.
You know, I was really disappointed when I went into Tim Hortons.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
I thought it was going to be this, like, awesome experience. It's like a Dunkin'.
It's a bad Dunkin' Donuts. Oh, yeah, I agree.
It's just so...
Wait a minute. Are you implying that Dunkin' is not great?
Dunkin' is horrible. They're bad donuts and terrible coffee.
Yes, I agree.
No, I still love Dunkin' Donuts.
You do?
But I love my regular... I still love Dunkin' Donuts, but I definitely hit up the local homemade donuts.
Yeah, we have some pretty good donuts.
Shipley's are way better. Krispy Kreme, way better. Dunkin' tastes
great. I've been a fan of Krispy Kreme, and I'm a Southerner.
Oh, no, you know what? Krispy Kreme is a Trojan horse. Because Krispy Kreme looks great. It's light. It's fluffy. It smells great. You taste it. You eat it. Your mouth goes, oh, my God, that's great. And then it lands and explodes in your stomach. It's stealth.
It's a tummy bomb.
Not just one of them. 12 of them. It's just so light. You just shovel it.
Do you agree with me? You feel terrible almost instantly, mm-hmm. right? Almost yep. instantly.
I feel... If you only eat one or two, it's okay. Now, I used to eat like six, and then suddenly I'd be like, oh, man, sugar high, what the hell? then I'd be better, and I'd be like, oh, I shouldn't do that.
I'll always remember you, Stacey, as the woman who taught me what meat sweats meant.
Please put that in my obituary.
I watched that. That was a great moment, yes.
Well, if I get the honor of doing your eulogy, I will, in fact, tell that story, I promise.
There we go. Yeah.
No, there's no brisket in heaven. There's none. All right. Let me take a break. I think timing-wise, this would be a good time to pause. And then Jeff is going to tell me all the TikTok stories.
Sure.
including one of
I put together a little
lobsterman. Wow.
I also put together a little a trio of stories about celebrating identity on the net, which I liked.
That sounds good. That's still to come. And we can't call it Fang anymore. It's Mang.
Wait, what? They've mangled Fang.
Mangled Fang on us. Well, it used to be Facebook, Amazon, Apple, Netflix, and Google. Fang, but Facebook is changing its stock ticker to Meta.
All right.
So now it's Mang.
Surprise.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, what are you going to do? Now that Cheryl's gone, it's all gone to hell. Our show today brought to you by IT Pro T. PV. If you are going to get in IT, you're going to quickly, you're watching our shows. We know you're a techno enthusiast. You know your stuff. You're probably the person everybody around you asks for tech advice. But if you want to get that job in IT, none of that's going to matter. You're going to have to get those certs, the certifications that tell your future employer you got the right stuff. So almost invariably, when somebody wants to get into IT, they find a school to learn this stuff, or they buy books or whatever. I'm just going to tell you the best IT training platform is IT Pro TV. It really is. It costs, you know, less than all those expensive books. The training is so much better. It's up to date. Instead of sitting in a classroom listening to somebody who hasn't, you know, booted a hard drive in years, you're actually going to get really, really good trainers who are experts in the business, who are really good at explaining it, whose passion communicates. They call them edutainers for a reason. They make it fun. The best possible IT training. Plus, it's always up to date. IT Pro TV has 7 studios running all day, Monday through Friday, recording new content you got to do that. The tests change, the software changes. There's always new material. That's why you get the most up to date, best possible IT training and certs with IT Pro TV. And best of all, you could do it on your own schedule. You could do it in little chunks if you want. All the episodes are in 20 to 30 minute segments. They have practice exams you can take before you take the test. That's very helpful. Virtual labs. You don't even have to have a Windows server. You just use your browser and set up a Windows server and clients and all that in the browser. And 5,800 hours of on-demand IT training that's always up to date. Always up to date. One reviewer said, the most engaging hosts I've ever watched. I highly recommend IT Pro TV, not only to IT professionals, but to people who have an interest in IT but don't know where to start. Very educational and entertaining. People like Ronnie Wong, so great, so fun. Tim and Don, they're just great. Don Pizzette is a fantastic, enthusiastic, knowledgeable guy. I love Adam. They're all so good. Check out some of the newest courses. CompTIA's A+ Core 1 and 2 series. A+ is often the first series, you know, the first cert you get. And they have the best CompTIA training. Their A+ Core 1 and Core 2 series are designed for professionals who do the, you know, core technologies, security, networking, virtualization. And as you probably know, if you've tried to get a job or you have a job in IT, that A+ cert is an industry standard for launching IT careers in today's digital world. There is no better way. More entertaining, more accurate, more up-to-date, faster than doing it at IT Pro TV. You learn about hardware, operating systems, networking, security, troubleshooting, and you can take the test before you take the test, so you'll know I got what it takes, or I better study some more. Coming up June 11th and 12th, their free project management weekend. Head to the website to get free courses and more information on a different side of IT. So if you're already in IT, this is a great skill to have. June 11th and 12th, free project management weekend. There are also 2 free live webinars this month for you to check out. Anybody could check these out. All things cybersecurity, hacking your way into the field with Daniel Lowry and Zach Hill, 2 of their best trainers. I love that. That's Thursday, June 16th, 2 p.m. Eastern. And speaking of project management, the future of project management with Chris Ward and Kelly Mack. That's Thursday, June 23rd at 2 p.m. Eastern. And if you've got a team, IT Pro TV's business plan is great for keeping that team up to date in IT. Visit itpro.tv/twit for an additional 30% off all consumer subscriptions for the lifetime of your active subscription. Just use the code TWIT30. itpro.tv/twit, offer code TWIT30 for an additional 30% off for the lifetime of your active subscription. IT Pro TV. Build or expand your IT career and enjoy the journey. And I mean it with IT Pro TV. itpro.tv/twit. Ant, did you go see Top Gun? I feel like you went to see it. I did not. Oh, Ian Thompson saw it. You haven't seen it yet? Stacy? I don't know. Are you a top? No. So Val Kilmer, as you know, who was in the original Top Gun, is also in the new one.
Didn't even ask me. He knew the answer.
Yeah. Did you go see Top Gun?
No.
Well, I mean, I had COVID the whole time it was out. Yeah. So,
no, it just came out. But it was huge. It broke huge. Val Kilmer and an Iceman, of course, is in the new Top Gun. And it turns out in the way they handle this, because Kilmer had, I think, throat cancer, so he can't speak.
Mm-hmm.
But he did have a line of dialogue in the sequel. How did they do it? AI.
But AI is bad, Mr. Laporte.
Not this AI. This is good.
It's a deep fake. We don't know what it's real now.
Sonantic
is the company.
Movies
used to be real.
They used a voice engine to teach the AI voice model how to do an accurate impression of Val Kilmer. The engine, unfortunately, did at about 10 times less data than it would have been given in a typical project. That wasn't enough. So they had to come up with better algorithms that could produce a higher quality voice model because there wasn't a lot of Val Kilmer to train it, I guess.
Wasn't there, wouldn't there be tons? He was in showbiz.
Well, he did. I guess, like, think about when he was Jim Morrison for The Doors. Did he sound just like he sounded when he was Iceman?
That's a point.
Yeah. Plus, you know, he was only Iceman, you know, in the one movie. You want to hear it? You want to hear the synthesized voice?
That'd be weird for him.
I would.
We all have the capacity to be creative.
You missed it because you were talking.
We're all driven to share our deepest dreams and ideas with the world.
Well, that's pretty good.
That is really good.
When we think of the most talented creative people, they speak to us in a unique way. A phrase we often hear is having a creative voice.
So if you didn't, you know, if you saw that in the movie and you, I don't think you'd know it was synthesized.
Right.
Well, you wouldn't expect it to be. I mean, aren't you creeped out by the fact that after you're dead, they could, like, recreate you?
I hope they do. I creeped out. Where do the royalty checks go?
I'll buy the NFT of Leo's voice.
Mr. Laporte, I'm going to be advocating for anything. You're coming back as Dev Noll.
Hey, there's a lot of video of me as a virtual character. I'll be better looking this time. You may remember the NFT insider training issue with OpenSea. Department of Justice has charged an ex-OpenSea executive with insider trading. This is the first time they've pursued insider trading with crypto.
Uh-oh.
Nate Chastain, the OpenSea staffer who quit after an insider trading scandal in September, is now in the crosshairs of U.S. authorities. He was charged today with wire fraud and money laundering. We had the story a couple of weeks ago. Before the NFTs were offered to the public, he was buying them up and then flipping them, dozens of NFTs, he got to decide which ones were featured on the website. So he would make 200 to 500%, boom, just like that.
Yeah.
And of course, he hid his purchases using anonymous digital currency wallets and anonymous OpenSea accounts. Not anonymous enough, apparently.
Air quote, anonymous. That's your old saying, though, right, sir? Make sure you're not the last person holding the bag.
Yeah.
Just be the next to the last person.
Yeah. So OpenSea said it investigated once it found out about his actions, asked him to resign. His behavior was a violation of our employee policies. He is actually currently working on a new NFT project called Oval. He was arrested this morning in New York, so maybe that's going to be on hold. If you are in France, do not call it le streaming. If you're a streamer, you're not a le streamer, and you are a streamer, you are en jouer en direct. And esports is jeu vidéo de compétition.
Oh, it's not l'esports?
Not l'esports, l'esport.
And, you know, a computer is not a computer. It is l'ordinateur.
L'ordinateur.
But they all say computer.
L'ordinateur.
So the changes were made in consultation with France's Ministry of Culture. Do they still have...
Yes. Those people.
What was it called? There was a name for the people who were responsible for keeping the French language pure.
Yeah, it's like the language.
It's an organization.
They have it. It's like their literature college, but it's basically their language.
Well,
approval process.
I don't know if they were involved in this, but
They had to be involved. That's the only way it happens.
They have a reasonable thing. It's concerned that English terms could become a barrier to understanding for non-gamers. Oh, okay, L'Académie Française. That's what it's called.
Yeah.
Yeah. France's language keepers, L'Académie Française, has also expressed concern about English jargon and gaming. So they were the ones who proposed the alternate French terms back in 2017.
Yeah, this is the language that it gave us. Faire du jogging, faire du shopping.
Yeah, and le weekend.
Le t-shirt.
Yeah.
Le
so
weekend.
I don't blame them. They want to preserve it. So for a while, they tried to stop Wi-Fi.
The French guy, yeah.
They tried to stop the word Wi-Fi, which, by the way, the French pronounce Wi-Fi, which is not
Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Which is I heard that a lot. So I heard that a lot.
Wi-Fi, yeah. L'Académie Française.
It's Wi-Fi.
They tried to get the French people to say l'accès sans fil à internet. L'accès sans fil à internet. I don't know. It didn't work. So it doesn't always work, but in this case, you are a joueur animateur en direct and a jeu vidéo en nuage for cloud gaming. Nuage in the cloud. Video game in the cloud. Jeu vidéo en nuage. Très bien. Pepe Le Pew would really enjoy that. Fromage à la omelette de fromage. did we do this story? No, I guess we did it on Sunday. You know Halsey? Do you like Halsey? I like Halsey. I like her work. Did we do this story last week, Jeff?
Sure.
No idea.
Nope.
So she has a new record.
Does Jeff know who Halsey is?
Do you know who Halsey is? You would like her music.
Kind of.
I'll play a little. Here, listen. Here's a little bit of her music. So this is a TikTok that she posted. I'm not going to play the whole thing because I don't want Halsey to get mad at me. But she posted a TikTok. Now, maybe this was a publicity stunt. I don't know. She's playing the song. And then, you know how they, on TikTok, text over it. Basically, she wrote, I have a song I love. I want to release ASAP, but my record label won't let me. I've been in this industry for 8 years. I've sold over 165 million records. And my record company is saying I can't release it until they can fake a viral moment on TikTok. Everything is marketing, and they're doing this to basically every artist these days. I just want to release music, man, and I deserve better, TBH. I'm tired. After this, a lot of artists said, yeah, that's right. Our labels say go viral on TikTok, or that's not a single. Gavin DeGraw shared a parody version of his 2003 hit, singing, I don't want to be on TikTok, but my label told me I have to. English songwriter FKA Twigs said her label was not only making her create and post TikTok videos, but they wanted her to post videos multiple times a day.
So what the heck is Lizzo doing on TikTok? A, because she's got like the song You Can't Escape, but B, Lizzo's always on TikTok.
Well,
she responds to everything. And I'm like,
likes
is she
it.
Just like, okay.
She likes it, and she's even got a TikTok dance. So yeah, this article in TNW says Lizzo regularly shares memes, vlogs, and recipe videos on TikTok and heavily promoted her most recent release, It's About Damn Time. She
Please don't do your head
I
like
can't
that,
do the so. Head.
Jeez.
Can you do it?
Just let Lizzo do it.
No, I cannot, and I'm not going
to
try.
I want to be able to. I can't. You get it.
Actually, here's what you do for that. You do. It's about damn time.
It's about damn.
That's actually the move.
Here we go. Ready?
Yeah.
Turn it up. Here we go.
It's about damn time.
There you go.
Oh, jeez.
All right. Everybody do it. About damn time. It's about damn time.
You go, in a minute.
In a minute.
In a 1 minute.
In 1 minute.
I'm Anita.
Nope.
Sentimental.
Man or woman.
Not man or woman.
Man or woman.
To pump me up.
Okay,
some of y'all be going,
oh, gosh.
Pump me up. No. Pump. me up.
Pump me up.
Okay.
Okay.
This is Lizzie walking in my.
This is how you do the dance. I love Lizzo. And by the way,
I was waiting for you to do your.
God bless her because she's not wearing any makeup or anything. She looks great. I just love her. She's real.
Yeah.
Gosh. Well, she's playing her. I think her internet persona is close to who she is, and she has created an authentic version of herself.
You know, what gets me with this story is.
What is that? What is that?
Melissa C.
I love her.
What the hell is this?
No, don't do that.
Melissa C.
You got to end it. You kept going. That was not right.
I love her. 23.
You should check her. She can play the flute, which I knew. But
she's a very good flautist.
She really can play the flute.
Did you see her at the Met Gala? She has her flute. She throws off her cape, plays something, she says, "That's all you're getting."
Smart. You got to pay for this. You know, what I get about this story is there are artists that are in that position of saying where the label's telling them they need to go viral on TikTok, but there's just as many artists out there that sort of live in the whole democratization of creative arts where they're going to TikTok first.
That's a good
point.
And
then the labels are coming to them after. You know, it's like they have the leverage then. And I don't get why they won't just do this themselves and say, you know what, I'm just going to build a bigger audience because maybe another label is going to come to me because of my following, not saying I have to have a certain type of following.
Like this guy, the Maine Lobster Man.
So this is quite possibly the biggest lobster that we have ever caught. And the only reason we were able to catch it is because he has small claws. At some point in his life, he lost his claws and he grew back some new ones. So unfortunately...
Oh, I thought he was going to sing or something, Jeff. Body, but Jeff put this in.
He's a 100-year-old lobster.
Don't eat it. Throw it back in.
He's going that can't be good.
Think about it. My father has very likely caught this lobster at one point in his life. So is my grandfather.
What?
And possibly my great-grandfather.
What?
Also caught it. If you want to get crazy, it's possible that my great-great-grandfather caught that lobster when it was a baby. They've all fished the same area for years.
Well, that's kind of cool.
Lobsters tend to migrate through the same areas.
But your great-great-grandfather, when he caught it, would have had it.
A lot of people didn't really understand it.
All right. He's been good eating then.
Grandfather have caught it. It would have been legal size. But
see, that's the explains.
When he was young...
Could have been too small or too big.
This lobster would have
been. Oh my God, lobsters look so much like spiders, and I cannot.
I know. Anyway.
At the end, he gives it a fish and sends it on there. He gives it a fish.
Oh, he feeds it. He says, "Here you go, lobster. I'm sorry I scared you. And go have a fish."
Let's say someone walks into your house, pulls you out at like gunpoint.
I know.
And totally traumatizes you.
And then gives
you
a fish.
Have fun.
Like, who cares?
Well, it wouldn't happen in Sweden. They wouldn't give you a fish.
They just throw you
say,
back.
Lobster, you're on your own.
Just throw you back.
No,
I thought someone
Lucas
else was cooking you food, lobster. Go on. Fish for you. This is nasty.
The joy of watching this is another Jeff. I'm warning you.
Yeah, it is
the joy of watching a movie. Okay, all right, I love this. Through a Snapchat filter. So what he does is he's watching There Will Be Blood. Great movie, very serious. Is it Daniel Day-Lewis who's in it?
It is. Yes, it's
Barry,
Daniel
you know, you drink my milkshake, I drink your milkshake. So he decides to filter him through the googly eyes Snapchat filter. And it's not quite the same. Let's turn on the sound here. Get the full effect.
I am a sinner. I'm a sinner. Say it louder. I am a sinner.
I'm a sinner.
Louder, Daniel!
Boy, that's creepy.
I am a sinner.
I am sorry, Lord.
I am sorry, Lord.
Oh, that's just creepy.
That is creepy.
There's other stuff.
Oh yeah, go up, up or down. This is the second one of the thread.
What movie is this? So how do you do that?
There's some dirty words there.
I'm not going to play the sound. I don't want to take down. How do you do this? You just You point your camera.
Well, so it's a new filter. The article below says this is I forget what they call it. It's a certain filter.
It's like a googly eye filter.
I don't know
filter.
How he then watched the movie through it.
I'm going to watch everything.
Yeah,
you know this. You know what this? You know what's going to sell? I've been wondering what the killer app for years. What's going to be the killer app for virtual reality or augmented reality glasses? Imagine your augmented reality glasses could make everybody you meet look like that.
Yeah.
As you're walking down the street.
Oh, hi, Aunt.
life will be either way more fun or way more creepy.
Oh, yeah. Wow. So what's the name of that filter? Because I want
to... It's the next line below. It's called the... I should have remembered that.
It looks like it. There. It's a... Here's the good... Here's the good, the bad, the ugly. Eli Wallach and Clint Eastwood.
That may be the best.
I don't know how to describe this.
Cue the ecstasy of gold.
Sorry, audio people.
So
we gotta put up a.
How do I do this filter?
Well, hold on. What does it say there?
Well, let me see here. What's the name of the filter? So,
it's called the Shook.
Shook. Okay, let me see if I can cast this. Oh, I found it.
Okay.
Hey, kids. I gotta airplay this.
Oh, that's amazing.
Oh, no. Do you see it now? Do you see me now?
Yeah, there you are.
I look like Gary Vaynerchuk.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no. So not good.
Okay, let's see
let's
see what Jarvis looks like, actually. That's something we can do here. Let's see what Jeff Jarvis. Hey, Jeff. Wait a minute. Stacy.
Super disturbing.
Oh. There. Oh, that's more like it.
Oh, there we go.
That's more like it. Oh.
I was like, I have a wig like that.
So I think with the hayseed coming out of your mouth, but I don't know where
the
Shook
it.
Oh, look at that.
Wait,
let's see if I can fix Jeff. No, it can't help you at all. No. It doesn't help you at all.
There's no help for him.
He's kind of pretty.
Oh, well, no, that got better.
He's kind of pretty. All right,
looks
Ann,
like
I
frequency
have to get
separation.
Oh.
Oh, wow. Dude, I look Asian.
Smooth.
Very different.
I almost looked like Filipino, like Joe Coy.
There you go. That's your
cackalacky.
That's it right there.
With the hayseed, I tell you what.
So I gotta find.
I want Jammer B. Jammer B. You gotta walk over there for Jammer B.
Come right, on over here, Mr. Jammer B.
Let me find a good one for Jammer B. Though.
I'm busy.
He says he's busy.
He says I'm busy.
I got one.
I'm
for
trying to manage this show.
Hey, boy. You know, this is so stupid. This is so stupid.
God bless the internet, folks.
God bless the internet.
Oh,
leave Jammer B alone.
Mama.
Leave him alone. I just can't find
Stacey says, I got off my sick bed for this.
I can't. I want to find the snooked one. Although I think all movies,
There we go.
Let's see Jeff Jarvis now. Wait a minute. I got to flip you around here. Let's see Jeff Jarvis now.
Oh, boy. Oh, my.
That is that's the inner Jeff channeling right through that one. This is so childish.
It's like seriously disturbing.
This is so childish.
Who knew?
Oh, gosh. Run.
Oh, God, it gives you chins.
Run.
Oh,
wow.
That was worse than the spider lobster.
Okay.
See, thank you, TikTok, for showing us
Thank
that.
You, TikTok, and thank you, Snapchat.
Right.
Thank you, Internet.
Yes.
See, they want
thank
the bad
Internet.
Guys want to shut this all down.
Mr. Jarvis, I've been sharing to TikTok more often. Have you noticed that?
Have you?
Hey,
what do you put on there?
Just random the same stuff that I would sort of put on Instagram Reels. Yeah. I just put it on TikTok.
Once again, it means nothing to follow you. You and Salt Hank, I don't
see. Yeah, it's all imaginary following. Right. You just have to search for them, basically. Oh, you're putting a lot of stuff up there. Yeah. A lot of stuff up there.
Were you singing and dancing, Ant?
That would be no.
Ant Pruitt the musical.
Well, I've just been noticing some weird activity with Instagram, so I said I'm going to start checking out TikTok to see if I get the same type of performance, because I'm looking at analytics. Not that I'm a Salt Hank or anything. Ooh. But, you know, I only have like 100 or so followers on TikTok, and I'll get 300-400 different views.
Oh, this is the Niners
TikTok.
One. Yeah, yeah. Well,
you know, versus Instagram, it's like my stuff is barely getting seen.
Everybody loves a dog. 1,200 views on that one.
What's your handle again? It's
Ant_Pruitt.
Ant_Pruitt. Right.
Yes, sir.
There you are. Oh, I thought I already followed. I didn't follow you. I follow you now. Okay.
But I've been playing with it just to see how it's going to pan out from an analytics standpoint, because it seems like Instagram, they're doing changes with how they're trying to prioritize things. So they want you to do more reels. And then I saw that, what's his name, Massari?
Adam Massari.
How you pronounce his last name?
Adam Massari.
Instagram guy,
The potential of having more vertical photographs show up on the regular feed versus it just being inside of the story. So I've even changed how I put my images on there, because I used to do them in a 1-to-1 aspect ratio. Now I do them in a 4-to-5 aspect ratio because they're a little bit longer, just to see how it performs there. And it's still weird because it seems like my reach is going down in Instagram, but my reach is going up in TikTok, even though I have, you know, like 3,500 followers in Instagram versus 100 followers. And
this is the
TikTok.
Fascinating thing about TikTok, and it's the thing my son is always trying to figure out and study, and he does A/B experiments, he does all sorts of stuff to see what generates more traffic. He tells me it's the likes, not the views.
Yeah, and I'm getting likes in TikTok. My phone is always saying so-and-so liked me. Not that I'm getting more followers, but there's always
The likes are important. I think he says that's a signal to TikTok, and of course the ultimate goal is to get TikTok to promote it. Then it shows up. See, the For You pages.
Yeah,
which is, the who you follow doesn't seem to do anything, but For You page is critical. No. So,
Tartar, 7.1 million views for Hank.
Way to go.
Yeah, he's 2.1 million followers now. He's not posting a lot lately. I don't know. Maybe he got busy. I don't know. He went to New York. He's probably talking to the agents and all that stuff. I don't know. He's got a book.
He's too big for you now.
I don't even talk to him. It's like, who are you?
Good for you.
I have to get his agent on the line and say, can I speak to
you? You're the John Voight of TikTok, yeah.
The cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon. Little boy blue and the man in the moon. Google Docs. Oh, no, this is the changelog. Should I do a changelog this week? What do you think?
You didn't do it last week.
Always.
I didn't
always
do it last week because it was so lame.
It was lame. No offense. Is lame a bad word? Jason's.
Is lame a bad word? Can
lame
I use lame?
Lame is a bad word. Yes.
Damn it.
No, lame is technically.
It was so pathetic. Yeah. Can I say pathetic?
Amber Ruffin. Yes, you can say that. Amber Ruffin did a really good thing on words that she's like retiring. This was like 2 years ago. And it's a really good little bit.
I'm never going to say.
Basically, if somebody calls himself that, you shouldn't use it in a deprecating fashion.
Lame means halt. You have a limp. You're halting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's derogatory. When we use lame, we use it. You can say this horse is lame.
Then, because it really is.
Totally fine. Right. Because you're describing someone who
you can say a person is lame because they're limping.
Yes.
But if you use it as an insult, it's a problem. Or use it as a negative, a derogatory term.
See, I understand that because you don't want to put down somebody who has a limp. But honestly, this is lame. So, I mean, it's
the changelog is limping along.
It's limping along. I mean, I think it's
now right now you're insulting Jason Howell, and that's the problem.
I think it's inappropriate.
We are
not. It's a metaphor. It's a metaphor. It's not trying to put somebody down. It's just a metaphor. I understand. I won't use it. But I worry that at some point we're going to not have
I really think you're reaching here because, okay, so this one is limping along. You could just say it's limping along. But when you say lame like that, you are saying something derogatory about a change log. You're not saying that the change log can't walk. Once you move to the metaphorical space, you're really on thin ice.
Can we see that facial expression again from Mr. Laporte?
Can I see that on the filter, please? That's where I really want to see it.
Okay.
I'm sorry. It's true.
No, it's good. I'm really trying to figure it out.
This is a trash. Is it okay to say this is a trash change log? Is it okay to say that?
Yeah, you can say it's a trash change log.
But you can't say it's trailer trash change log.
No, don't say
that. Because that would then be insulting to trailer trash.
Yes,
like, if there's a person correct. Associated with the insult, then you can't use it.
That's pretty much
that makes sense.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Okay. I am glad I'm an old man because I can get away with this. They just say, oh, okay, boomer.
This change log is compost.
It's compost.
Just say this is a terrible change log.
But does he even know yet?
Terrible means
last week's was.
What does terrible mean? Literally, terrible.
This
means
is a dull change log.
Dull is so dull.
Is it
dull?
Is a
dull?
Okay.
Is a dull adjective. Dull. So, but I'm going to work harder to be a better writer, and I'm going to come up with a good word. This change log is lambent.
But you're talking about last week's change log. Do you know that this week's is bad yet?
No, I haven't even looked at
this one yet.
That's the thing. See, so you're being triply unfair.
No, I was saying something nice about it. It's lambent.
I now can't see your face.
This is a refulgent.
Without thinking it's going to pop out in Google Eyes, in a weird mouth. It's ruined it for me.
Jason says, as long as there is a changelog section in the document, I will continue to fill it with terrible news.
Thank you, Jason.
Thank you, Jason.
We can make fun of them about meat. No, we can't do anything until are we going to play the trumpets or not?
Yeah, go ahead. Play the trumpets. All right.
The Google changelog.
Number 109.
No, this is a big story, actually.
Yeah, actually.
So, again, with the messaging, Google is changing things up.
And the branding.
Wrong one, John. This one. What the hell's going on? When did I lose control? This one in front of me. Google is combining Meet and Duo into a single app. They're going to call it Deet. Or is it Muo? I don't know.
It's even dumber than that. They're going to call it Meet, but it's actually built on Duo.
It is Duo, but they're basically they're changing the name.
Yeah, exactly.
By the way, I love your nails.
The nails are great. Yeah, those are cool.
Is that something you did while you were in Frisco?
When you were in isolation?
So this is actually the day before I tested positive. It's so old, and you can tell if you see how much my nails have grown out. But I just kind of got lazy. I didn't have nail polish.
No, I like that color. It's kind of a light blue. It's beautiful.
Fun, yeah. It's cool blue.
Google is... Pretty soon, there will only be Google Meet. But it will be Duo.
Does this mean I have to invite everybody onto Duo again? Because, you know, it's hard to convince people in the first place. And they just...
So Duo, which is like FaceTime, right? It's like it's for video calls. Mm-hmm. I use it with my daughter because she's an Android user. It's great. In fact, it has that nice feature where you knock. So when you call somebody, if you want, it will show your video so the person can see, without answering it, can see that you're calling. So you can kind of, talk to me, please, I beg of you, that kind of thing. So Meet, which is their Zoom, right? I don't know if they're going to add Zoom-like or Meet-like features into Duo. It's not clear. It's as usual.
It's so Google. It is so
Google. Google is going to, this is from The Verge, as the two services become one, Google is leaning on Duo's mobile app as the default. Pretty soon, the Duo app will get an update that brings an onslaught of Meet features into the platform. Later this year, the Duo app will be renamed Google Meet. The current Meet app will be called Meet Original.
And then there's Google
Talk.
Is
this a nice way of saying they're killing Duo?
No, they're killing Meet.
Killing Meet.
But they're just like the only thing I use on a regular basis.
We use
it. Love Meet.
But you can continue to use Meet and it'll have some, I don't know.
Makes no sense.
The Duo mobile app... According to Dave Citron, the director of product for Google's video products, The Duel mobile app had a lot of sophistication, especially, he's got to explain this, especially under the hood, especially in emerging markets where network connectivity was sparse or highly available. Variable. On the web, it's different. Meet is much more developed web, so it forms the base of the new combined system. But in both cases, the idea is 100% of the functionality, combined forces, and no users left behind. That's the line today, anyway. What is wrong with these guys?
Okay.
It feels like every time there's a new manager, they put their mark on it and they change it, and then a year later it's another thing.
It's canine editing. You lift your leg and
this is
on
when
it.
Pachai smell
you're there. I like that canine editing. I know what you're saying.
This is when Pachai is.
Wait,
stepping.
Are we insulting dogs?
Yes. This is the Google Changelog Leg Lift Edition. What did you ask, Ant? You said something.
I was saying, shouldn't Pachai step in? I mean, this is the type of stuff that a CEO should sort of rein in and be like, look, we need to get our crap together.
Yeah, and leadership and focus. Would help. Clearly, there is none. Yeah. And this is Mike Elgin's contention, is that Pachai is not a very good leader. And I have to say, I think so. Right. Google Docs is getting now you can do this one. A big upgrade in formatting. You could change multiple blocks of text at once. Oh, this is pathetic.
Big upgrade, Leo. It's not just an upgrade, it's big upgrade.
Let's see. Here's Project Blackbriar. So you have these two blocks, Project Overview and Market Trends, and you want to change the bold on both. So you can select both and change them both to bold, and they both get changed even though they're discontinuous blocks of text. So you hold the command or control key. Holding it down, select the other bits. You kind of understand how to do that. That's always been a way to
get
in
all of those Word power users hyped up.
Right? Maybe.
Actually, I could use that. So
I could too. I could use with the book.
And if you have the paintbrush, what you could do is get one of those exactly as you wanted. Here he is changing all the fonts and everything, making it so ugly, and then selecting all the other ones and making them the same.
It's just a formatting thing.
Isn't that the format painter in Word?
Yes.
Right?
Very similar. Google says the feature will gradually roll out to everybody's accounts over the next 15 days, so look for it in a Google Doc near you.
By the way, can I just interrupt for 1 second here? Because it's what I do. So I just had to send out invitations to an event I hope to have, with COVID willing, at the end of the month.
Yeah.
I had to send out 40 emails. Because of my dear beloved Chromebook, and I could save up to 5 things, separate things, and then insert them, whichever one I wanted, right? That Chromebook feature that came out a couple years ago.
Yeah.
It was heavenly. I saved the names. I saved the subject line. I saved the body of the email. Boom, 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 boom. It's wonderful.
Good.
That's possible because you have Chromebook. I just want to say that. I just haven't praised them.
Very enough. That's you're a power user, Jeff.
What's a Chromebook? What is that?
YouTube for Android and iOS.
You're a nice guy, Ant.
Can now connect to your TV for easy commenting and sharing.
I have no idea what that means.
Oh, great. This is exactly what we need in the world. Easier commenting and sharing on YouTube.
Okay, fine. I don't know what.
From my television.
From your TV. I guess that's the idea, right?
That's the idea.
Yes.
By the way, Google has launched a new app in the App Store on iOS. Google TV is a new app, the Google TV app. iPhone users can get recommendations from across streaming apps. A watch list for the discoveries, a For You tab with watch lists from their favorite stars, on-the-go content library, the ability to rate movies and shows, all the latest info of their favorite content, as well as the option to use their phone as their remote for Google TVs and other Android TV devices. The only thing you can't do is actually watch any of these shows. I don't know. Can you? They don't mention that. This kind of replaces Google Play Movies and TV, I guess.
But it's really built on Duo. with a touch of Google Talk.
Yes.
And Google Play Movies, which is dead because it's now YouTube Movies. We're going to build it on the Google Play with some Google Plus.
If you had the Google Play Movies and TV app on iOS and you didn't delete it when they, you know, deprecated it, it will turn into the new Google TV app. I was remiss. I should have downloaded this on iOS before the show, and I forgot. I meant to. I wanted
to. You bring an Apple product to the show?
I do, as well as a Pixel 6. I got them both.
Okay.
Right. Okay, don't worry.
All right.
Just relax. It's funny, because it thinks I've already downloaded this. You know how you get the, you already downloaded it. It's not a new one, so I don't. Maybe that's because I had play movies and TVs before. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Search across streaming. But I want to check this because my question is, can I play something? But maybe, I don't know. Welcome to Google TV. You can tell it what you subscribe to.
Care?
Huh?
Do we care? No. It's change lock.
I care. It seems like it's kind of silly if all you can do is search for stuff.
I see Stacey's head going down.
So let me watch something.
He says, move along,
along. Yeah, yeah. Oh, but when you say watch now, it then opens up the other app or the web. So it is just really kind of a search thing. All right, this is for you, Jeff. You better enjoy it. Chrome OS 102 is rolling out. USB-C cable alerts.
Oh, you bought the wrong cable, you idiot?
Yes. Yes.
That's actually what it does.
That's fantastic. Yeah. It'll alert you when USB-C cables don't support a display or, quote, isn't performing ideally for your laptop, or if it doesn't support USB 4 or Thunderbolt 3 standards, and that your Chromebook does, et cetera, et cetera. So this is great. This is thank you, Benson Leong, who is the guy who, remember this, was reviewing Type-C
USB
cables.
Cop.
He was the USB cup on Amazon. He was saying, this one doesn't work, this one does. He is a viewer. He is in our Twitch social Mastodon instance. And I thank you very much. This is his thing.
And Glenn Fleischman is an expert in USBs as well, our new friend.
Yeah. Benson says, all USB-C cables, even those without logos, and that's the big problem. They're supposed to put logos on there, but they never do, identify themselves to the computer precisely using PD. My team reads that info now. We eliminate a silent failure when the user uses a USB 2.0 cable with a DP dock or monitor. We give you a warning. Thank you, Benson.
That's good. I'm surprised somebody didn't come up with a hardware device so you could test your USB cable.
Well, you have one now. It's called a Chromebook.
I don't have one.
See, another reason to get a Chromebook.
Will Chrome OS 102 probably won't be on? Will it be on all Chromebooks? Have you updated it yet?
It's updating right now.
Good.
It's very sad.
That's nice. Double tapping on a zip will extract all option in the menu. That's kind of what happens on a desktop, normal computer. Good. Good. This is good. Chrome OS 102. Thank you.
See what's new.
And that's the Google change. See, that wasn't anything that was refulgent. It was
refulgent. Good Lord.
It was refulgent.
I think Webster's is taking insult at that.
I've got the thesaurus open and I'm not afraid to use it. Dot-dash Meredith targeting print investments.
So this is interesting. As you know, Dot-Dash Meredith, also much of Time Inc. is there, killed my baby, Entertainment Weekly in print, along with Eating Well and other magazines in print. And now, and there was a report 2 weeks ago, I don't think we mentioned on the show, that People magazine might actually go out of print.
We did mention that on the show. That was a big story, yes.
And they lowered the circulation from 3.2 million to 2.8 million, which is amazing. Mm. So now what they're saying is, this mass stuff, these big print stuff, we're not so interested in that. But little tiny niche stuff in print works. So it marks, once again, the end of the era of mass media. Is the print, it doesn't support, you got to bribe people with premiums and all kinds of stuff to get them subscribed to a magazine just so you get advertising you can't get it anymore. Pfft, that market is gone. But witness this company, Enthusiast Stuff, they're saying still works in print. So, Leo, I think you should come up with the Twit magazine, is what this says.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think they mean putting Harry Styles on the cover of Better Homes and Gardens is what they mean. That's what they're really saying. This is an Axios story by Sarah Fisher. Thank you, Sarah. There is a typo, Sarah, because it says the company has several core print titles, which it does not.
which means that we're immature, we giggle at.
They're actually, well, and your spell checker would not actually say tittle is bad, is not a word, because it is. It's a jot and a tittle. People, Better Homes and Gardens, Real Simple Food and Wine. It's a Bible thing. You just wouldn't understand. Travel and Leisure, All Recipes, Magnolia, and Southern Living are core print titles for... Is the name of the company Dot Dash Merit?
Yes, it is. Yes. Yeah.
What's with the Dot Dash?
That's the successor to all the stuff that Barry Diller put together. And he rebrands stuff like Google does. And he named it, it's all content factories. And he named it Dot Dash. It includes College Humor, I think, still. I forget what all.
So one of the things Dot Dash put out of business was Brides in 2019. But now they're thinking of bringing it back because that is, I guess.
Which I used to work on, Brides.
Really? It is,
oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah. You should have seen me in my
gown. What did you write?
Yes.
Five pieces every trousseau absolutely must have. So they're going to add small pieces of print not economically relevant to some of our other print brands, according to somebody. This is interesting. They're just basically trying to save the magazine business. But when they put Harry Styles on the cover of Better Homes and Gardens, which does not compute, really, what is normally on the cover of Better Homes and Gardens?
A home or a garden.
Fruit. Cakes.
Cakes.
Houses.
Houses. Yeah, not
it says normally houses.
Not rock stars.
Porches.
The company took a big gamble last month by putting Harry Styles on the cover of Better Homes and Gardens, but it paid off. The first day of the Harry Styles issue, we did not put a link of how to buy the magazine online anywhere, and we sold 15,000 copies.
Well, we've always known that famous people sell magazine covers.
Yes.
I mean, that's not new.
B, H, and G, which is how I called the title, used to have 7 million subscribers. It's now 4 million. Used to.
Well, part of this, too, is you're getting rid of junk circulation. Some circulation is very expensive, and it was worth it when you had the ads.
Right.
But when the ads go down, it's not worth it to support the junk circulation anymore. So they've got all kinds of brands. They have Eating Well, Food and Wine.
The more niche.
All recipes.
It's funny, because that's exactly what Ziff Davis did when they got into computer magazines. They went more, you know, left some of the mainstream titles behind and went more narrow. Speaking of Harry Styles, the Jonas Brothers are backing a new subscription media biz for celebs.
Ooh, texted.
Why does that have to do with Harry Styles?
I don't know. He's kind of...
Celebrity. Famous person.
What
was Harry Styles in?
Something boring right now. He was interviewed by Howard Stern.
He was in a band. Yeah. I don't understand. The Harry Styles thing is kind of beyond me, but it's definitely...
Was he
in a band?
Maybe not.
I think he's his own. No, he went on the X Factor.
He's just his own thing.
Oh, he was in One Direction.
That's what I thought. One Direction.
That's okay.
One Direction. Yeah. One Direction. I remember them. Anyway, Harry, it has nothing to do with this story. The Jonas Brothers, which I don't, you know what it is? In my mind, the Jonas Brothers and One Direction and BTS and
things you're too old for.
All these boy bands are kind of similar, basically, in my mind.
Same thing to you, right?
Yeah, they're all the same to me.
Wasn't the Jonas Brothers, weren't they much earlier than One Direction, though?
Well, maybe. I don't know. I don't know the chronology.
Do we care? No.
I care, yes. They sell magazines, Jeff. You should give a damn.
So the Jonas Brothers are launching a new subscription media company called Scriber that allows celebrities to charge their biggest fans for exclusive contents via text messages. Would you subscribe? Who's your heart?
Oh my God! It's like Cameo with words
with text messages. Because it's text messages, they don't need an app. They don't have to go in the app store. They don't have to pay 30% to Google or Apple.
Yeah.
My old employer, Advance, did a company like this, and they used, for example, in Cleveland, where you could get exclusive text to you for from the sports columnist, inside stuff as the game is going on, things like that.
They estimate that the super fans represent about 1-5% of the total celebrities' fan base. So it's the top 1% of your fans.
We'll find every way we possibly can to get money out of them.
But the Jonas Brothers, as an example, have 50 million Instagram followers. If just 1% subscribed, that'd be $30 million a year for the Jonas Brothers, right? So interesting. The users can subscribe by texting go to a phone number provided by the celebrity on social media. Unsubscribe by texting stop or cancel. You could set up recurring payments via Apple Pay or credit card. You'll get exclusive material, behind-the-scenes videos. I think this is going to be very successful.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a newsletter.
So, Leo, you're going to start a text subscription
service. I should do this.
And a magazine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I should do this.
I think Ed could seriously super serve his
That's
fans
true.
That way.
Well, and it follows in a trend because Twitter's got the super follows, right? And TikTok has subscription support. Instagram's doing subscriptions. So this is kind of the trend. You know, we were a little ahead of that with Club Twit. We said, you know,
Club
we think
Twit.
Our super fans, and it is about 1% maybe, I don't know, would pay $7. And we thought initially that was the big come on was no ads. But really, it is about the community and about getting
always.
To talk to
mm-hmm.
talk to the people and have a side conversation, things like that. So I guess that makes sense.
A story I want to hear Stacey's take on is the Roomba operating system.
Oh, no. You killed Stacey.
Dang.
You killed her.
Oh, no. I feel so bad.
I think she inhaled her
beads. Why'd you have to bring that up?
Inhaled her beads.
I'm sorry, Stacey. I won't say it again. I'm sorry.
I'm very excited about it. So excited. I can't breathe.
Oh, my God. I'm not making fun of you. I'm actually worried.
Are you okay?
But that's why I just might caution that your go-to reaction, which is maybe dangerous.
It is true. It's
do not wear beads. Make sure your earrings are well attached.
I can't breathe in very deeply still.
Oh, I see.
COVID. So whenever I try to breathe in deeply, I end up not being able to. And then my body's like, crap, we can't breathe. Anyway, Roomba.
Sorry, Stacey.
That's good.
And we don't need to laugh.
They have a new, aching. They have something. Now, is this different? I mean, of course, it was always running software and an operating system.
This is their new robot operating system. By the way, we're going to have... Oh, it's not robot operating system.
iRobot OS, they call it.
iRobot. Yeah, because there's actually a robot operating system that's an open source robotics, like industrial robotics OS. That's pretty cool. And then Apple's going to launch their Reality OS. We're going to have a lot of ROSs, not ROUSs.
That's going to be confusing.
But Roomba and their iRobot operating system is awesome. Because I think it is going to do what I actually wrote about it just a couple of weeks ago. I was so pissed off because our smart home is just these like disparate pieces. And we get like Amazon coming in here with Astro, their little robot thing. And I'm like,
do you have an Astro?
No, I don't have an Astro. Oh, if I had an Astro, I would totally show you guys.
Oh, man.
Like,
yeah.
Hello.
Are you
going to
get
it?
Are you
going to
get an Astro? Are you interested?
No, I mean, it doesn't have hands.
It doesn't work.
It doesn't do nothing.
It doesn't do anything.
Unlike the iRobot, which you...
Yeah,
so,
I argue that your smart home is the robot. And this, actually, the software is... What Roomba's trying to do is picture its little vacuum cleaner as part of this, like, property of other items in the home. And it's got... They mentioned its air purifier could be part of this. But once you have Matter and Roomba is participating in it, you could actually pull in data about all the other devices plus their camera. And then if you actually have an OS that makes those work together, and it would probably be very privacy preserving because Roomba has been focused on that in ways that...
Well, they got in trouble Amazon because haven't. They were mapping people's houses.
Okay. So they got in trouble because people thought they were mapping people's houses and giving that data to Google, but that's not actually what they were doing.
They kept it on the angle, Roomba.
They kept it locally.
Okay.
Yes. So people, they mapped your house and asked you.
That's part of the deal.
Was that a moral panic, perchance?
Oh, my God. It was inaccurate reporting.
It happens. Yeah.
Anyway, so I'm really excited about this, as you can tell by me, like, not being able to breathe.
Also, you can talk to it through Echo or Google Assistant or Siri. You could say, yes, clean the living room.
Well, you could do that today.
Oh, okay.
So what this is the next level of that, is kind of this next layer of context and integration is what they're working on. Today, they have like the beginnings of that as part of, I think they call it their Genius OS is what it is. And it does things already. Like my Roomba will tell me, it'll be like, hey, yo, I see that your kitchen counter area has lots of crumbs. Do you want to, right over here by the kitchen counter, do you want me to create a special cleaning spot for that? And I'm like, holy cow, yes, I do. Thank you, Roomba.
Oh, and you could clean up every morning after breakfast or something like that.
Yeah.
You'd be smart enough to do that.
I mean, I have a dog, so it's not an issue. But
well, they also say that you can, during pet shedding season, which mm-hmm. is right about now, you can have the Roomba do extra cleaning where the pet hangs out. So my only complaint, we've had many Roombas. They don't do a very good job. Are they doing a better job now? Do you use Roomba?
Yeah, okay.
You still have to.
I actually talk a lot about this on my show.
Here's my point. Oh. You still have to vacuum, right? It doesn't eliminate the need to vacuum.
I don't have to vacuum my hard floors. I do vacuum my carpeted floors once a week. Actually, okay. I don't. My husband does.
Okay.
Actually, and he may not vacuum all
of them. Is that because the Roomba does not get them?
Well, yeah. I mean, you just want a deeper clean.
Right. But if you...
It's not strong enough. Okay.
Yeah.
That was my question.
Yeah.
It picks up lots of stuff. It does not... And it picks up a lot of pet hair. And the pet hair, it doesn't pick up. It kind of creates into these little balls that like hang out. And then you're just like, oh, there's a pet hair ball.
Well, and the beauty of this is the Roomba will actually drive around animals, like in this video.
Yeah, my dog and the Roomba get along just fine.
The dog is apparently getting a back scratch from the Roomba.
Yeah, the dog's like,
it's going right around, went around the nose. It's going down the legs. I think the dog's enjoying it.
Is it going to do a tummy rub?
It's trying to go in there. Oh, yeah. Oh,
almost. Oh,
he must have trained this dog so well.
No, I was like, appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. That was good. Oh, that was good.
That was good for me. Was it good for you?
That was good. Maybe we'll get a Roomba. I don't know. Lisa loved the Roomba, and she used as evidence that the Roomba worked. She would say, well, look at all this stuff it picked up. I mean, it's working. But I noticed.
Yeah, it does pick up a lot of stuff.
Yeah, but we still had to vacuum. We have a lot of carpets and area rugs and stuff. And then I've told the story before, the Roomba would get stuck every night. Do you do your Roomba at night or do you do it during because you're not supposed to do it when people
are
around.
The hardest part about all of us working from home, basically, is when do you run the Roomba?
When do you Roomba?
So we usually, the way we don't schedule, we just, my Roomba's name is Terrence. So I'll just say, hey, Google, tell Terrence to vacuum the master bedroom. Oh. Terrence is about to do it. Sorry. Stop.
Terrence is running. All right. There I go, boss.
Oh, no. Now my phone. Hold on. Okay. All right. Sorry.
This is life with Stacy.
Well, and another famous problem with the Roomba is that it would, forgive me, but try to vacuum
to do that.
Pet poop.
It has now since
anymore.
Learned.
Oh, good. Okay.
I mean, that's the beauty of these learning systems. The software update.
Well, yeah.
I love my Roomba, so I mean we use it every day. And
$850 for the new one, the J7 Plus.
Oh yeah, but it comes with the thing. It comes with the sucker upper.
The thing, you know, it has the thing.
Sucker
How
upper.
Could you not have the thing?
What sucker upper?
See that big thing that's attached to it?
Oh,
that,
you don't. It Roomba, empties it.
Yeah.
Oh.
It sounds like a jet engine
that.
Going off. Yeah, but you only empty that like once every 2 months.
Ah.
So basically, we just have this vacuum, and like our dog sleeps under our bed, and you can't vacuum under the bed really. So like all that hair gets picked up. We vacuum like once or twice a day. Live in the Pacific Northwest. Our laundry room is just this constant source of like, imagine your house the day after Christmas or the day after you take your Christmas tree out. There's just pine needles and mud everywhere. It takes care of all of that.
Oh, that was a big problem. In fact, that killed our Dyson because it got all the piney needles got all glued together in there. We had to go, yeah, really clean it out. So should we get a new Roomba? I mean, I you know, I'm the one who kicked the Roomba out. I feel bad. Maybe we should get a Roomba.
Well, if you have, I mean, what kind of carpet? We have Berber carpet. So if you have really long haired, shaggy kind of carpets,
shaggy.
Maybe it wouldn't work.
Yeah, the bedrooms.
Yeah, it works really well in the Berbers.
Yeah.
You need new carpet.
Yeah. Yeah. And
I thought shag carpeting went out about 1978, Leo.
Well, I got it. When it went out, I got
not
it.
Not in the LaPorte house.
Yeah, I got it. All right. Okay. Apparently, The Verge has a review that it doesn't do a great job avoiding poop. And I'll tell you why that's a big deal. If it doesn't avoid it.
Do you really want to share it
out? It's problematic.
Really want to share
it's
it
just
out?
A mess.
It is quite problematic.
Well, yeah, that is a problem. Yeah.
That was also part of my vacation time.
We don't have a huge issue with that. I mean, we have cats, but they don't go in the house. So I guess it's okay. Are there other better robots than the iRobot?
There are plenty of robot vacuum cleaners.
I know. It's very competitive field.
Yeah, like Evax has a cheap one. Wise even came out with one.
Wow.
I saw the one for Wise, and when it was sent to the email, I the first thing I thought was, well, anybody
trust it? Oh,
Lisa
just came in and said, never again.
No, I drove it over in the garage when I left one day. I don't want to
I put it under your wheel, but you didn't drive over it. You smart enough to catch it.
What?
You tried to get her to murder your Roomba?
The Roomba. I've told this story. Haven't I told this story? The Roomba... We did it. We ran it at night, and it would get caught every night. It would get caught. There's one, like, sideboard that was just high enough for the Roomba to kind of get under it, but not. And then it would go boom, 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 boom.
Right.
So every night I'd hear da 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 because it makes music when it starts. Boom.
It gets caught in an endless loop.
Yeah, and so I pick it up and I put it back on its little charger, and the next night at 3 a.m., same thing. So eventually, instead of picking up and putting it on its charger, I picked it up and put it under Lisa's tire. But she...
Sir, that's just flat out evil.
She didn't...
yeah, that is.
She didn't actually drive over it, I don't think. She thinks she did. Maybe she did. I don't know. It disappeared
after
that.
That's evil.
Those are expensive too. That was
spoken
like
a Corleone.
Bucks. Yeah, I took that Roomba and I put it under the tiles. That Roomba now sleeps with the fishes. All right. Is there any? Of
I like
other...
the idea of that tech. I just want one of those things to actually have legit suction. You know?
Yeah, I agree.
The same
well,
way we
don't
have these
tell Queen
ones.
Pruitt about this.
Uh-oh.
This is the 10-minute robot manicure. You put your fingers in.
Oh, dude. Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, honey. You've been replaced.
That's a sore subject right there, sir.
You have to go to a Target in Minnesota, so it's not yet a threat. 10 minutes for $10. You pick one of the 25 colors offered. You put your fingers in the machine one by one. The machine scans the nail, paints it, starting around the edges, working to the center, applies two coats at once, and it works.
Oh, no.
Well, you know, it's got two nozzles or something. I don't know what that means. It's the world's first.
You know, the benefit of having a Queen Pruitt manicure is you get to see her smiling face, and you get to...
I know, and you could talk.
Hand massage.
I was about to say, you get to talk to Queen Pruitt.
What about
She's
that?
Fun.
Harry Styles and all that stuff. So, yeah, this is from a company called Clockwork, and it paints your nails right in there. I don't know.
Wow.
It seems like I could do... It's not a manicure. That's just a nail painting.
Nail polish.
Seems like I could do that.
It looks like polish your finger is trapped and you can't get it out.
Term.
Eesh, I know. It's pandemic
this is
friendly.
Not an episode of Saw, Mr. Jarvis.
Yeah.
All right. I think... I've done the change log. I think we almost killed Stacey. I think it's time to do the final ad to get your picks of the week. I don't think there's much more we can do here today. Our show today brought to you by New Relic. If you're a software engineer, you've been there 9 p.m. midnight maybe, you're unwinding, you're relaxing, maybe you're even fast asleep, then your phone goes off, there's an alert, something's broken, and you're going, oh no, was it that commit I pushed right before bed? Is the server down? Is the cloud down? Your mind's already racing. What could go wrong? Back end, front end, global server, network, cloud provider, slow running queries. You got the whole team scrambling from tool to tool, messaging person after person to find and fix the issue. You've been through this. You know. And, you know, according to New Relic, only about half of organizations, of all the organizations in the world, are actually trying to do something about this. They're implementing observability, is what you call it, for the networks and systems, which give you a view, single pane of glass view into your whole operation to know where the problem is so you can fix it fast. The report showed maintaining network observability is a big issue for companies around the world. And if you're Epic or GitHub or Atlassian or Cloudflare, you are turning to New Relic. New Relic. 16 different monitoring products you probably get separately, but they're all in one, which makes it great because you can just use one stack and get all the information you need. Things like application monitoring, APM. Unified monitoring for your apps and your microservices. Or if you use Kubernetes, you'll love Pixie, instant Kubernetes observability. You get not just tracing, but distributed tracing. You can see all your traces without management headaches. You can find and fix issues fast. You get network performance monitoring that goes right through the silos and all the way around. A system-wide correlated view so you'll know exactly where performance issues start. This is exactly the tool you need to find the problem, fix it fast, and get back in bed before the boss even hears about it. More importantly, you can pinpoint issues down to the line of code so you know exactly why the problem happened. You can even fix the code and resolve it for good. That's why dev and ops teams at DoorDash and GitHub and Epic Games and more than 14,000 other companies use New Relic to debug and improve their software. Whether you run a cloud-native startup or a Fortune 500 company, it'll take you just 5 minutes to set up New Relic in your environment. And here's the best part. You can get access to the entire platform, all 16 monitoring tools, and 100 gigabytes of data every month free. Forever! You don't even have to give them a credit card. Look, that next middle-of-the-night call is just waiting to happen. Get New Relic before it does. NewRelic.com/twig. Get the whole New Relic platform, 100 gigabytes of data, free per month, forever, no credit card required. Only buy what you need when you need it. Otherwise, free forever. NEWRELIC.com/twig. NewRelic.com/twig. This you just have to have it. You need it. You got to have it. New Relic. And since you don't have to give them a credit card, just install it. Don't even tell the boss. Just install it. Just do it. Do it. You know you want to do it. Stacey, it's been so long since we've had your thing of the week. What do you got for us?
Nothing.
COVID-19.
Oh. I got COVID-19. Okay. No. I was like, I have many.
What are you? Well, you don't have to give us a thing. But what are some of the things you're looking at? You're working on. You're preparing for the future.
It's sorry. Okay. Doesn't have to be I can anything. Tell you. The Stacey, the thing that I have been recently watching
is... that's good.
Bo Burnham's Inside. He just put out the outtakes just a couple days ago, and I really enjoyed those.
Who is Bo Burnham?
He is a comedian.
Stacey's side eye there. Really?
You're no, I'm like, oh, are you really asking?
Oh, okay. Wait a minute. This so he does
funny.
He does like
he plays the piano.
No, right? I know who he is. He does Netflix comedy specials and like that. But this video is behind the scenes.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's the out there's a couple outtakes that are funny. And you know, they're all outtakes, so they're not so only a few of them are very polished. But a lot of it is his
inside,
creative process.
Had you seen Inside before?
Oh my God, yes. So as a person who makes content for people on the internet in somewhat of a void, because I'm my own person, right? And as someone who is also, you know, definitely depressed, when I watched Inside, I was like, oh my God, this guy is speaking to me. I mean,
well, normally you hide this. My mother always said, if somebody's a really good baker, it's because they put so many cakes in the trash. You know, they only show you their best stuff. So normally, and I know exactly what you're talking about, Stacey. You'll watch a talented performer and you think, I can't ever do that. They're perfect.
Yeah. So but you see that, in, especially in the
yep.
way.
Yep.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of us probably could identify with this. And you think about like Anthony Bourdain, you think about Kate Spade. There's a huge number of highly successful on the outside people who I think experience a lot of self-doubt as part of their creative process. And it wears Indeed. On them. So I liked the parts where he's kind of, you see him trying to struggle to make something. It felt real.
So, and he did start on YouTube. So, I mean, he's kind of, you know, he's familiar with this.
Yeah,
this
he started video. On YouTube way back at the beginning. He was one of the first viral YouTube people in like 2006.
So you probably would say watch the Netflix special first, Inside.
Oh, yeah, yeah. If you haven't watched I feel like if you haven't watched the Netflix special, it's excellent for anybody who spends a lot of time on the internet. So, and then it's pretty funny.
I gotta watch this. I tried to watch.
Have you never seen it?
No. I tried.
Oh,
neither have I.
You should check it out. You know why?
Why?
Yeah, I will.
He did all of this himself, and the lighting and the camera work is awesome. Like, oh, nice. Really creative. Like, and he did it all himself.
So it's not a stand-up special, Inside.
No.
It's, what is it?
I didn't realize you hadn't seen it yet.
Never heard of it even.
No, I hadn't seen it. It recommended it to me, but I hadn't watched it yet.
Yeah,
Netflix recommended it to me.
I tried to watch Ricky Gervais last night, and it was awful.
No, go watch Inside. You'll enjoy it.
It was so awful. I love Ricky Gervais. I love The Office, but I'm sorry, I don't love him anymore. What a jerk. Okay, so good. So I need something to watch. Something. It's comedy, though, right? I'm not.
It's hilarious. Here, if you do. Google, welcome to the internet.
His musicals are funny, Mr. Jarvis.
I have the YouTube
right here.
Version of Welcome to the Internet.
Well, I just have the whole, this is the Netflix, I mean, I won't play it, you know.
Oh, but, no, do the polished bit. Just like
this is the polished one. Yeah, this is it. This is Bo Burnham's. I'll just jump to, just so we can see the lighting. Oh, so he's in his house. He's playing songs. Yeah, he's doing what a YouTuber does.
Yeah.
Is it funny or is it music? What is it?
It is both. It is all of the above. Oh, see? That was Welcome to the Internet right there.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So I'll watch this. This is 4K and high quality and polished and that stuff, a couple of hours. But then watch the outtakes, because then you'll see that he goes through the same struggles we all do, except he has an air conditioner. So
yes.
He does have an air conditioner.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's maybe one little difference. Wow. So this is interesting. Sounds like he's very creative. Very talented.
There are tons of creative people on the internet.
It's amazing.
At last, we can see them.
There are.
Yeah. 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 And this guy's probably not a guy who would have gotten a network television special.
No, he went viral and he actually talks about that on the thing. I'm sorry.
Oh, good.
I'm just jumping all over you and my enthusiasm.
Jump all over me, baby. It's fine.
Oh.
Did you call her baby?
No,
I didn't
mean that. My friend. Oh, no, I just meant it's okay. I would have said that to anybody. It's okay if you got to have
I believe it. And that's exactly how I would react. I'd be like, oh.
I don't mean
this
literally.
Leo lessons. It's not lame, and she's not a baby. Certainly not.
Friend. Jump all over me, friend. Go. That's no better. Jump
no,
on
it
me.
Really
I don't
isn't.
Mind if you jump in. Please, I appreciate your enthusiasm.
There you
yeah.
go. Okay. All right, someone else go so we can get out in time. Like, this is awkward.
Jeff, baby, you got a number for me?
Well, honey.
Sweetie cookie.
I'm going to do this one. So one of my contentions in defending the internet and trying to explain where it fits in the world is that each new medium since print, yes, I'm a Gutenberg moment, take your gulp, when it brings more people... into the public conversation, those who controlled it before resent it and resist. The Reformation meets the Counter-Reformation. And what's happening on the internet these days is that people who were not at the table to set norms and decisions and power are now there. And it peeves the people who were there. But we've got to not lose sight of this magnificent diversity of creators and talent that we see coming on. So there were three stories that just came out of everywhere else, but I put them together in one place because I thought they spoke to this. One is about the people at the center of Black Twitter. One is about TikTok honoring the class of 22 LGBTQ trailblazers. Another one is the LA Times talking about the old guys TikTok and how they've become incredibly popular. And it just reminds us that this is the value of the net of social media, of creation there, is the voices who were not heard in mainstream mass media, run by old white men like, look like me, but they're less pink. And we get that value out of them now. So if you look at the people on Black Twitter.
I'm completely lost here. So every time you do this, you always have a bunch of links, and I'm listening and trying to figure out which of the links is he going to. But I don't.
I was about to do
I'm seeing Pitney Bowes' Amazon stats.
No, it's up.
Scientists discover biggest planet on Earth and how much companies pay. This has nothing.
I did a teaser earlier. I wanted to do Celebrating Identity on the Net. It's there in green at line 40.
Line 40?
Wow, way up there.
I went back because you let me do my story that I wanted to do because it's not a democracy after all.
So I decided
to be an insurgent.
I'm sorry. Okay, let's do it now. That's fine. And we'll save Pitney Bowes for another day.
The Pitney Bowes story was boring as cold.
Yeah, which one should I? So you want to do
line 40.
The people at the center of Black Twitter?
Black Twitter, right? And it's a great list. Now, some of this is stuff that they don't want me watching. They want to do what they want to do.
I subscribe to a lot of these people. I actually asked Lovey, I said, who should I follow years ago on Twitter? And she gave me a whole bunch. And a lot of these people, although it's always growing, which is fun.
It is. It's great. And I follow a lot, too, but I added a few more today.
This is a good list. So these are...
Some I'm not welcome to join in on. They're having a conversation among themselves, and that's fine.
Well, you don't have to say anything. Can you listen?
Yeah, of course you can, but some of it's not meant for me. This is the moment when I always praise the book Distributed Blackness by Andre Brock Jr., which I highly recommend, and Black Software by Charlton McElwain about this, creating a space for a community online, which you can do. You don't have to be mass. You don't have to talk to everybody. You can talk among yourselves, and that's the beauty of the net. So a lot of these people don't
have a huge number of followers.
And they don't need
Raven
to.
Only has 4,000 followers. You know, that's great.
Before the steam-powered printing press, the average circulation of a daily newspaper in the United States was 4,000. It was big enough to be a newspaper then. It's big enough now.
Yeah, I think, absolutely. I don't judge somebody by the number of followers they have.
We have Teen Vogue with the LGBTQ.
Who has become very much a political force in this world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the LGBTQ trailblazers on TikTok, and we don't have to go through these particularly, but it's just making the point again. But then I would go to the next story of the LA Times about the old guys, and there's one video in there because it's really charming.
It's always pride on old gays TikTok.
So these four guys are on TikTok all the time. They come across my feed regularly, and there's one video sample of them in there. They're great.
This one with Rihanna, the music from Rihanna?
Yeah, the Rihanna one. Yeah, yeah.
Following you.
Really?
Oh, you're kidding.
Oh, my God.
I love that girl so much.
Really?
She's the queen. She's one of me. Such a beautiful, talented
woman. You go, Rihanna. You got good taste, my sister.
I was going to say, thank you.
Why would such a beautiful, talented woman of Rihanna be watching us?
Because we're entertaining. Aren't we, Rihanna?
Or maybe it's because she thinks
of this. That's great. It's just
old.
And do y'all know her nickname?
No.
No.
Riri.
What?
Riri?
So they obviously have somebody egging.
That is everybody's parent. Wee wee.
Riri. Is that really? So there's obviously somebody egging them on. And so what I get from this really is there's a kind of younger guy behind this.
Well, that happens a lot.
Oh, no,
I
got to
put you on TikTok.
No, there's not. They do their own thing. I mean,
they do.
There might be younger people involved, but they have their own, like, anyway.
Nice.
It's their show.
You want to see 19 million views on TikTok? Here.
Oh, geez.
Maybe I'll stop now. How about that?
No, go ahead.
They're dressed in bunny suits. It's not playing for some reason. Here we go. Let's try it again. Oh, they're dancing to Michael Jackson. What? That's a lot of views for four guys in bunny ears and sequin blue sequin shorts.
The only point here is, God bless the internet.
Just out of curiosity.
Be themselves.
Are these guys my age? Just out of curiosity. I think they probably
Does it say in the LA Times story how old they are?
They probably
See if you see a number.
Oh, my
I
God.
Feel like they're older than that.
I hope they
I
are.
Think so.
Praise
I think
the
so.
Lord. I hope they are. They don't. I don't think they. Oh, wait a minute. A canny director slash stylist slash social media manager. A 35-year-old named Ryan's push for TikTok was driven by a desire to give people a behind-the-scenes look at the old gays. So, yes, I was right. There is a 35-year-old media guy who said, oh, I got
a handler.
Did
you see the Holocaust survivor who just came out with a book, her grandson or great-grandson, interviewed her regularly on TikTok, and then he just came out with a book, and it made the New York Times bestseller list.
Wow.
This is what's happening on TikTok.
That's cool.
So she's 90, like 90.
Two of the guys are older than me. There's two 78-year-olds. One guy's my age, and the other one's a couple of years older. So
you're heading there. You know, in a buddy suit, try to get attention before you know.
Thank you, honey. All right, let's move on to Aunt Pruitt and his picture of the week.
Okay, my picks are, because I didn't do too much research, but I did know about Canon's new R7 and R10 cameras. The R10 is an APS-C mirrorless camera where they're basically just saying, you know what, all of those DSLRs are dead, so we're trying to bring people into the mirrorless world,
but with a smaller
regardless of their budgets,
a smaller sensor and a smaller price. Yeah, $1,000, not
smaller
bad.
Sensor. So this one's $1,000.
Yeah.
Then they have the R7, which replaces
the one Henry wants. Yeah.
No. This is replacing the old 7D, which was another APS-C DSLR.
Okay, good.
So, but it was a little bit more expensive. This one is about $1,500 because you're going to get 4K 60 frames per second oversample, 32 megapixel sensor. So it's got a little bit more beefier specs, but it's still a smaller sensor. It's not a full frame sensor. Well, there's nothing wrong with an APS-C sensor. It just depends on what you want to look like. But yeah, they announced those last week, and you can pre-order them whenever you want to.
You're probably, Aunt, too young to remember a film camera, the Olympus OM-1. Do you remember that?
It was. I've seen the lore.
It was a classic. Actually, you could still, you know, buy them on eBay and Amazon. They were beautiful. Here's one for $252. Classic. I loved them. This was one of my first 35mm cameras.
I think I had that too.
Yeah. Oh, it was a. This was back in the 70s, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Nikon my grandmother had that I broke looked like that.
Yeah.
It was an old film camera.
Is that how you say it?
Yes, Nikon. Most people say Nikon.
I had no idea. I did. Yes. I'm like, oh my gosh, I've been saying it wrong my whole life. Thank you, Aunt. Sorry.
No judgment. It's all right. But I've been around them enough, and they always said Nikon.
That
my grandmother had looked like that, and that I broke. That's the one that really got me into tinkering with stuff because I broke it and didn't want her to know I broke it.
So it's back together. I think the 50th anniversary of the original OM-1 film camera, and I think this is kind of a nice tribute. The folks, you know, Olympus.
Oh, DP Review.
Yeah, Olympus sold the OM series, their Micro Four Thirds series, to a company called OM System, and they've released their first one on the anniversary of the Olympus OM-1, and they're calling it the OM-1. The last one with Olympus, but of course it's digital with it's a Micro Four Thirds. Lisa loved her old Olympus MFT cameras. We have a lot of those lenses. So
as did Mr. Scott Bourne.
Yep. Yes, he was a big fan. I think he still is, because he said
still likes them.
Yeah, my hand was getting heavy on the big, heavy cameras, and these are really amazing cameras. So they just released this. I thought I'd get it for Lisa before the cruise, so don't tell her. But it just came out, and I think it's quite a beautiful camera. But we'll do a review. That way I can write it off. So
There you go.
No, we will do a review, because I know there are people interested. You know who else? Andy Yanako loves it. Did Scott Bourne stop shooting Olympus?
To an extent, because he's doing more video now, so he had to So he had to pick up the Sony FX6.
Right.
He was doing video with that. But he's also a big proponent of iPhone video. So he and Mr. Jefferson Graham are doing more with iPhones and videography.
Interesting.
And started a new show on that. And he's done a lot of good stuff with it.
So this does pretty good video, too, actually. He might be interested in it. Mm-hmm. They've improved the video a lot. They stacked the sensor and all that. Ant's pictures are, as we mentioned earlier, on Instagram, @_Pruitt, and TikTok.
Give me a follow there. Give me a follow there, folks, @_Pruitt. And if you check out that last reel I did, we talked about lighting in that last reel. I just did a little bit of behind the scenes on
coffee,
how I created a shot, because I was struggling creatively and went out to my garage / lab and threw some lights up and figured out a way to
nice
put a little shot together.
Fun.
There's a key light right there over the top, and then I put another light in the back corner to give it a little bit of a sun ray, and then just grabbed my cinema camera and just shot some random footage.
Very nice.
Because I have no life.
No, these are beautiful. Look at this. Oh, man. The last shot, the last image was so gorgeous. I guess that's... Oh, well, you just have
it's
to follow.
It's in the photos.
Is it in the photos?
I posted it on the photos,
oh,
too.
Okay, good. I'll go back, go back to the posts.
To the photo tab.
Yeah, such a gorgeous shot. Look at that.
Thank you.
Yeah. And, of course, Ant every week regales us with his photography tips and interviews on hands-on photography, twit.tv/HOP. He's also our community manager. You're going to be doing the book club in about 10 days, 2 weeks. How far have you gotten?
Man.
I just started it. I love it. Oh, I love it.
I'm going to say this now. Yeah. I'm struggling with this book right now because I've been in such a foul mood.
Yeah, it doesn't help your mood, does it?
Yeah,
it's about climate change. I'm only about a third of the way through. Termination Shock by Neal Stephenson. He's one of my favorite authors. It sounds like you don't like it either, Stacey. I'm sorry, it's your book club.
I didn't enjoy the book, but everyone was like, let's watch it. I was like, okay, fine. Neal Stephenson needs an editor.
Yeah. You know what I like about him, and I really enjoy about this book, is his research, his erudition. So you always learn a lot about the most...
Yeah, you know what the better climate change novel is? Ministry of the Future by Kim Stanley Robinson. But both of these books have a plot problem.
Yes.
They're just... boring ass plots.
Yeah, Neal's famous also for poor endings, and John tells me that the book doesn't have the best ending either.
Oh yeah, that's terrible.
Oh, this will be a great book club coming up. Well, we can, you know,
still join the club.
They don't have to all
still
be good.
Join the club.
Yeah, join
well,
the club.
Well, they can. It's fun to listen to complaints. Having been a critic, it's fun to listen to complaints. Sometimes.
I'm coming in to defend it. I'll come in to defend it because I
really loved the whole thing about the Sing. Or yeah, the Sikh religion. Sorry, not the Sikh.
Yeah, that
Sikh
was fascinating.
Religion.
Yeah, yeah.
I enjoyed it because I had two friends who were Sikh growing up, and I was just like, "Hot damn, there they are! Look at them looking like badasses." I was really excited for them.
Well, we'll talk about it. That's Stacey's book club. That's June 16th. We also have Alex Lindsay. You're gonna ask me anything next month, and I imagine a few more events coming up. Lots of great shows.
I'm actually working on an event with some of our members. I'm going to figure out a time to get all of them together.
Oh, I'd like to meet some of these people that we've been talking with behind the scenes.
I'm going to do a bit of a fireside chat with them.
Good.
I'm working on it. I was off last week and I refused to do work. So just give me some time.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. I look forward to that. That will be very fun. One of many things going on in Club Twit. If you're not a member yet, go to twit.tv/Club Twit. $7 a month gets you ad-free versions of all the shows. Entrance into this most exclusive club and the Twit Plus feed, which is always, always fun.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Aunt Pruitt. Stacey Higginbotham's at StaceyOnIoT.com.
You made it, Stacey. You made it.
Jeez.
I did.
What a soldier.
Jeez. You are
what a camper.
Tough. You are tough. You put up with me. You sit here for hours gassing about nothing. We appreciate it.
Fighting off COVID.
She's got a much better podcast with Kevin Toefel. It's fantastic. You'll find that at StaceyOnIoT.com, the IoT podcast. And any events coming up, Stacey? You probably want to rest for a while.
I'm doing it next week. I am in Wisconsin in Green Bay.
Talking about
IoT security.
Oh, my God. All right, hardest woman, hardest working woman in showbiz, ladies and gentlemen.
So, Stacey, it's all about
IoT security.
You don't regret going to the event in San Francisco, or do you?
It was the event in Dallas.
Oh, is that right? You were in Texas, right?
What event?
I'm sorry. Did you regret going to the event?
Oh no, it was actually a really good event up until getting COVID. I enjoyed. It was a smart home event held by Parks Associates. So
nice.
It was good for a bunch of reasons. The number one reason was I got to see like all the people from the smart home industry and pass them COVID. And I got to like have this event with Parks, and I had a weird history because they kicked me out of one of their shows a couple of years back. So it was my first time back with them.
Kicked you out?
They kicked me out because I kept noting that every panel was really a manel, and I found that upsetting and frustrating. And they were like, could you
please I remember this. You were tweeting about it, right?
Yeah, I was miffed. But
Respect.
They had women this time.
Yeah, see?
And it wasn't just me.
Yeah.
So I was like, I got to give them credit. They brought me back, and they were like, all right, we got women.
I totally remember that. That was a big furor, and I was proud of it.
It wasn't a furor.
It was a Twitter furor.
It was surprising. Yeah. No one's ever kicked me out of an event. I felt like truly an awesome journalist. I was like, yeah, I've made it now.
Yeah.
Truth to power.
Hey, unlike me, they invited you back after they kicked you out.
All right.
Jeff Jarvis, ladies and gentlemen, he is the director of the Townite Center for Entrepreneurial Journalism at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York, buzzmachine.com. What's the story with your book?
I haven't really announced it anywhere yet, but the Gutenberg Parenthesis will be published by Bloomsbury as an academic and trade book, coming out by the start of the next year, I hope.
That's really good news. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I'll
go with Mazel.
I'll be the one to say congratulations, baby. Well done, honey. See? Don't ever let him tell you. Just because you're a pretty face, you can't write. No, actually, that's a very prestigious publisher. I know you were looking. You got a good one. That's good.
First try.
That's a big deal. Yeah. Thank you, everybody. It's good to have you all back. Now, you're not going to be here next week, right, Stacey?
No, I'm in Wisconsin talking about IoT security.
Desert us again.
Well, I'm probably.
I'm going to tour Lambeau Fields. Is that a thing?
Oh, I'm Lambeau so jealous.
Stadium. Yes. You, man. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I'm a Green Bay fan. Oh,
you know, he's a huge Green Bay fan. Our son, Michael, he is an owner. He has a share in Green Bay Packers. He's because it's the only NFL team that the fans own. They own the stadium, too.
The public.
It's a wonderful. I'm so jealous. How fun.
And there's cheese.
Yes. Yeah.
There's lots of cheese.
I'm very excited about the cheese.
A lot of cheese.
I wish I could go.
I know. We were going to drag Michael to the Niners Green Bay game in December. I was going to make him paint himself green and gold and say, take off your shirt. But cooler heads prevailed, or warmer heads in this case. Cheese heads prevailed. Well, have fun, Stacey. We'll see you in 2 weeks, I hope.
Yes.
Jeff, are you going anywhere that we should know about? You're going to be around for a while.
No, I'm going to Virginia next week, but then I'm driving back early in the morning so I can be here in
thank
time
you
for the
thank
show.
Thank you. Because, yes. And you'll be here next week.
Yes, sir.
All right. I think we're
Stacey,
talking.
It is very hard sometimes to replace you. You should know.
It is. We have to work really hard, but we are working on somebody.
Ones.
Yeah. We're, yeah.
Mm. Jason works.
Is it because y'all are trying to not make it a mantle?
That's exactly right. No mantles here. But I think we may have a fella on next week if we can't get the gal that we're trying to get.
Because how can you replace Stacey?
You impossible. Can't, and that's the truth.
I mean,
I'm glad you didn't die.
Me too.
Yeah, really am.
And I'm especially glad I did not die in Dallas at the official hotel of the Dallas Cowboys.
At the Frisco, ooh. Texas. Omni Hotel, ladies.
How was the takeout? But you didn't care. The room
she couldn't taste it. They had tacos, but They couldn't taste the
tacos.
They
had some of my favorite taco restaurants, and I did get the, and I got queso. I could actually taste queso. So that was nice.
Oh, good.
Well, because it's basically like creamy, and then I'd add like a lot of spice to it. Yum. And then I was like, oh, this is spicy, so creamy. Jealous. Delicious.
See if they have queso in like Wisconsin.
They have cheese curds.
No, it's fried cheese curds, my man. Oh, fried cheese curds.
Squeaky.
Squeakers. Oh, it's the best.
I can't wait.
Thank you, everybody.
I'm really excited.
We do This Week in Google every Wednesday around about 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2100 UTC. If you want to watch live or listen live, go to live.twit.tv. After the fact, you can get the show at twit.tv/twig. There's a YouTube channel. Of course, you can also subscribe in your favorite podcast player, and that way you'll get it automatically. Do us a favor. If your podcast player lets you review, just give us a 5-star review. Let the world know how great this show is. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time on Twig. Bye-bye.
Don't miss All About Android every week. We talk about the latest news, hardware, apps, and now all the developer-y goodness happening in the Android ecosystem. I'm Jason Howell, also joined by Ron Richards, Florence Ion, and our newest co-host on the panel, Wen Tu Dao, who brings her developer chops. Really great stuff. We also invite people from all over the Android ecosystem to talk about this mobile platform we love so much. Join us every Tuesday, All About Android on twit.tv.